Well, I don't want to break the glass. That's better than the glass. Find a chair.
Do this left-handed?
I can do it left-handed, sure. Okay, well, welcome. Find it a little cozy, cozier than normal, but we will make do. I'd like to call the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council to order. Bill? Where's Bill? He went, I think, to get the city administrator. Yes. Nope. All right.
Nobody available, but I just say thank you there.
Great. We do want to express our appreciation to the City of Alexandria for graciously letting us use their facility. Members, everyone has a packet in front of them. You will notice an agenda, meeting minutes, an accomplishment report, and then a couple of different process documents and a proposed meeting schedule, and some budget information. The agenda has been modified by Bill just ever so slightly to accommodate some new things that have come to pass in the last few days since the last agenda was sent out. Bill, do you want to just highlight anything that is new here that was not in the agenda that was sent out to members here a few days ago?
Yes, I believe the administrative budget update has been added, and the Lessard Sam's Conservation Partner Grant Program has been added.
Okay.
This has the errant number 7, if you happen to have the...
Yep.
So you can delete that. There is no 7. And so, that is it, I think.
Okay. And what I would propose is that I'd ask for any additions to the agenda. One thing I would like to do is just add just a brief chair's report. There are a couple things that have gone on that I'd just like to briefly update council members on. We would do that after the approval of the meeting minutes and prior to the personnel update. Are there any other changes to the agenda as proposed? Not, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as modified. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Minutes from our meeting on May 21st in St. Paul. You should have the meeting summary in front of you. Bill, could you just walk us through? There was, I know, one slight change that you and I talked about that is now in the revised minutes.
Yes, it's reflected on page 2 of the minutes in the packet. The second paragraph, section 5, subdivision 6, audit, had erroneously indicated the council recommended an independent auditor, and it's been corrected as a result of a call from Representative Hansen to the statutes had called for an independent auditor.
Great, thank you. Any further discussion on the meeting minutes? Any corrections that need to be made? If not, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the meeting minutes of May 21st, 2009 as amended. Motion. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Meeting minutes are approved. I'd like to just spend a couple minutes to update you on a couple of things. Yesterday, Bob Schroeder, myself, and Jim Cox were invited to meet with the Clean Water Council. Now, just by way of background, the Clean Water Council is an executive branch council. It's a larger council than ours. It's either the high teens or the low 20s. 21, Greg? And their role initially was to advise on the implementation of the Clean Water Act and some initial funding that was made 2 years ago. They do not have formal authority or advising on the Clean Water Fund as part of the constitutional amendment, one of the 4 new funds created from the amendment. But they asked us to talk to them about the process that the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council went through in developing its recommendations. And then we had a very good discussion for probably an hour and a half about opportunities that we might interact in the future as we move forward. If you recall, a number of our projects that we reviewed back in February had both clean water and habitat components to it. And we talked about some suggestions about at a staff level and at a council level and at some maybe an executive committee level how we can interact more and I thought it was a very worthwhile meeting. They're following up as a Clean Water Council's steering committee to identify some ways in which they would like to interact with us more. They also would like to see if there's a way for their council members to be part of a possible field trip that would deal with habitat and clean water issues concurrently. And I'm certainly open to that, but I did indicate to them that we have a very ambitious timeline that's set before us, so we probably aren't going to be able to schedule new meetings in this current round as we move to develop fiscal 2011 recommendations. But if there's an opportunity in one of our field tours, and the one that comes to mind is the one that is at least proposed for the metro area in September, that we might be able to do something that deals with both clean water and habitat around the metro area. I'm thinking of the Vermilion River project as being an example. But anyway, I thought it was a good meeting. I defer to Bob and Jim for your take on the meeting itself and any thoughts you have.
No, I think, Mr. Chair, there was some discussion about trying to interrelate the opportunities or look for those places where there's crossover between conservation work that benefits either or habitat or water, and work together and try and find when that exists to avoid having those opportunities fall through the cracks by either council.
Jim, any thoughts?
Nothing really to add, other than, you know, they talked about also that we'd like to get, if we can, on the same accomplishment plan, so we're both talking apples for apples when we do our work and prioritize our accomplishments, that they're in sync with theirs. And they also talked about, you know, parallel structure, if we possibly someday, you know, operate in, you know, parallel universes to each other.
Mm-hmm. I thought overall it was a good meeting. I've asked Bill, staff to... Oh, David.
I just have a question for you. Go ahead.
Well, just to round out, I just wanted to say that I've asked Bill to see if there are any parallel opportunities to meet either as an executive committee to executive committee or full council to full commission with the LCCMR. And so far we haven't been able to find that venue yet, but Bill is exploring opportunities that we can have some interaction with the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. David?
I'm just curious if your discussions with the Clean Water Council got into buffers against water courses, lakes, if that was part of the discussion at all, or if it was more just it would be nice to work together.
More the latter. It was more of the 30,000-foot conversation than the details of specific projects, although we did relate a couple of examples where, you know, some of the projects we reviewed had definitely clean water benefits and maybe less so habitat benefits, but more in general. Any other comments on that? Yeah, Bill.
Can you just, point of clarity, Chair, describe the council, maybe the makeup of the council, Clean Water Council, if you will.
Well, I'll do my best. I'm not the most knowledgeable, Greg or Bob. Hey, Bob, why don't I turn it to you?
Senator, in 2003, I believe it is, the legislature, maybe it's not 2006, thanks, Greg, 2006, the legislature created in the executive branch the Clean Water Council, 21 members, many of whom represent, or the commissioners of agencies, chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Natural Resource Commissioner, Ag Commissioner, PCA Commissioner, maybe one of the Metropolitan Council Chair, maybe, I can't remember. But then there are also citizens who are appointed to represent particular groups. For example, Representative Torkelson happens to be a member of the Clean Water Council, but he was appointed as a representative of farming interests. And he may have been appointed before he was elected, but I'm not certain of that. He was. And then there are other folks as well. So they've been around for a little while and have been working on issues of clean water before the dedicated funding amendment passed, and had some responsibilities or participated in recommendations to the legislature of 2 years ago before the amendment passed, and last year as well, if I remember that right. Greg, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Well, the only other thing is that there are also city and county and township representatives.
Right,
too.
Right. Those, yeah. So it's a big council. They got backlog stuff. And if you look at the recommendations that the legislature adopted, many of the recommendations of the Clean Water Council were adopted by the legislature. And a substantial amount of funding has gone to the agencies and programs within those agencies to deal with.
And I think just that, part of the conversation is I think they would like to aspire to have some more formal role in making recommendations on the appropriations from the Clean Water Fund. And that's why part of the reason was just to find out the process we used, how we went about doing our business.
One point we made about. is that if you think about it kind of at a 10,000-foot level, I'm hard-pressed to come up with an example of where the work of this council doesn't have some direct or indirect effect on water or water quality. But I don't think it's accurate to say that the recommendations of the Clean Water Council in every case has direct or indirect effect on habitat. For example, they recommended funding for our wastewater infrastructure or for wellhead protection. Those are not necessarily direct benefits to habitat. So I think... that's just something I keep in mind.
Jim? I was just going to ask Bob and Greg. There's not a lot of environmental or honey hook and bullet groups as part of this council.
No, I don't think the legislation designated representatives from any of those groups.
I think there may be some designated environmental groups.
Yes, but not for
hunting and honey.
Welcome, Senator. Please grab a chair and join us at the table.
Thank you.
Which actually is perfect timing. I want to welcome Senator Saxhog to the council, and either Bill and or Greg, if you could just help refresh our memories as a council about the appointments. There are two particular appointments to this council where the members can delegate a representative for them, and one of so Greg, if you could just refresh our memory on that.
Yeah, it's actually in 97A.056 subdivision 2. And it's paragraph D, where it says legislative members appointed shall include the chairs of the legislative committees of the jurisdiction over environment, natural resource, finance, or their designee. And then, of course, it goes on about the minority party members. So basically, the chairs, as you know, Representative McGinnis would be the first peer, but his designee, Rick Hansen, to serve in her place. And as I understand it, the issue is how long is the appointment good for? And as I understand it, as long as you know going in, it's usually best. So as I understand it, we can maybe talk more about this, but Senator Saxhog is a temporary replacement for Senator Anderson with a time limit on that.
Right. In fact, on that point, I did receive an email from Senator Anderson yesterday, just formally acknowledging she's unable to participate and requesting that Senator Saxhog serve in her place for this meeting and the meeting tomorrow of the council.
Well, Mr. Chair,
yes,
and,
Senator.
Can I get some more recent, it wasn't correspondence, but apparently Peter Watson isn't really sure whether a 1-day replacement can be a voter. So.
Okay.
Don't count on me for the tie cast to the vote.
Okay.
I'm happy to be here. Anyway.
Well, welcome, and I'm glad you're able to participate.
Thanks.
Well, I think the issue there would be, and Peter's pretty cautious about these things. The issue there is the timelines. It says or their designee, and there's no set timeline in the statutes on how long that lasts. And,
right.
But it probably. Best if Senator Saxhog doesn't need to vote if he doesn't, just because he hasn't been a part of what you guys are talking about.
That's a better reason.
All right. But we certainly encourage you to participate in any and all discussions of the council.
Thank you very much.
The other thing I just call your attention to is Representative Hansen did inform us prior to the meeting starting that he unfortunately is not able to attend. He has some personal commitments he was unable to get away from. So we are formally excusing Representative Hansen from this meeting. Another thing I just want to call your attention to, I guess the last item, is that the terms of the current executive committee members, chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer, and legislative representative, expire per our bylaws in June of this year. So at the end of the month, those terms expire, and we need, as a council, to elect a new slate of officers, and we will do that in the July meeting, and we need to give proper notice. Bill, could you just elaborate a bit about the process by which we will go about and elect these officers and the length of their term?
The length of the term, I believe, is 2 years. At least that's the way it is in LCCMR. We will have a sign-up for positions ahead of time by contacting the chair. A person can nominate themselves, the executive director. A member can nominate themselves or nominate someone else. In addition, nominations will be open at the meeting itself. And there is an order in the bylaws that we follow, beginning with the chair, vice chair, and on down through the slate.
Just looking at the bylaws, in fact, the next elections are for 1 year because it says that the elections will now be made until every even-numbered year. So when we make a decision on our next slate of officers in July, that slate will be good until June of 2010, and then the next set of recommendations will be for 2 years. So we're, and that really helps accommodate the fact that a number of us are here for two-year appointments. Any questions on that? Okay, with that, Bob, I'd defer to you, and give, if you could give us an update on personnel matters.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Hubinger from the Legislative Coordinating Commission is here as well. We can certainly ask detailed questions of Greg if we need to, though I think this might be relatively straightforward. As the council will recall, we have an executive director's position to fill. Greg informs me that yesterday or today, the Legislative Coordinating Commission legislative leadership has approved the council proceeding on posting and hiring the executive director for the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. So that will be posted, and applications will begin to be accepted shortly. And then we'll follow a process that has been used by the LCC in the past, where an initial screening will be done, a screening committee of Mr. Hubinger and a couple other staff folks will do that initial screening. And then when the list of applicants have been narrowed, then a group of four members of this council will meet to actually interview the candidates that have met that kind of servant-level threshold. So my hope is that within a month or so, we'll have a narrowed list of potential applicants, and then can proceed with hiring.
Great. Thank you. Any questions of Bob or Greg? Because Greg is here. Now would be a good time to ask about the transition from an interim to hiring a permanent executive director.
I think the question, Dave? That I have is from a process going forward. If the my understanding is if the executive committee does the interviewing, it's an open process, and if it's a advisory select group or something, it's not. I just would like that confirmed.
Well, as long as less than a quorum
of any committee.
So what action do we need to take to decide that?
I think the action we need to take is that the chair of the personnel committee can advise me as the chair about what route he would like to take, if he'd like to use the personnel committee or just create an ad hoc committee of four members. It was up until now, it was my understanding that for purposes of personnel, that meetings could be closed, but that's not the case?
That's not my expertise, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And Greg is saying that's not the case.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, my understanding, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hubinger, is that the... That Greg Knopf is correct, that we can't have a committee quorum size of any committee of a council to meet in private.
I don't think we get into kind of a little sticky situation because any group that's formed by the council is still supposed to also be subject to the meeting. So it may be best if the council doesn't select and that somebody like Greg selects who the members are going to be, rather than being an official council-appointed group. I think you'd be safe to do that because any subcommittee or group that you form also subject to the open meeting law. So it might be better to do it in some way like that, where the appointments are actually by the LCC or by Greg or something.
But ultimately, Dave? The decision is subject to approval by the whole group, or not?
The decision on the hiring.
Yes. On the hiring,
yes.
But that would be a public meeting. The question is for the interviews. Yes, it would.
So I would recommend that we do whatever possible to allow for a private group to do the interviews because it's a lot less, it's easier to have productive meetings, I think, that way, and then bring the recommendation to the whole body. That would be my recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that's right. I will offer to meet with Mr. Huebinger and take it to the next step.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions on personnel? If not, administrative budget update. Bill?
You'll find in your packet a single sheet of paper that's titled Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council Administrative Budget for Fiscal Year 2010. I wanted to put this before you so that I believe the proper thing to do is to provide any advice that you may want to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, to whom your budget is appropriated. And at the 60,000-foot level, we've got about $245,000 in total personnel, $146,000 in supplies, expense, and support, including travel and consultants, and a reserve of $213,500, which is available for emergencies, the things of that we might along the way think that we need or know that we need. And any reserve that's not spent carries forward to the next fiscal year and becomes part of that fiscal year's budget. As far as the personnel section is concerned, you can see the salary ranges or approximations. I just wanted to point out that the administrative assistant is an 11-month number, and the project analyst is a 10-month number, reflecting the fact that there's a series of hires that the council has to do, and that all personnel won't be coming on at one time. In the supplies, expenses, and contract support, the top item is an estimated repayment of the loan from DNR. I believe that the it's listed at $100,000. I believe that the accounting through June the 2nd was somewhere in the mid-$60,000 amount that had been expended from the loan from DNR. So that'll probably be a little bit less. The other item I wanted to point out, which is a pure estimate, is the bottom item, consultant contracts. That's for the strategic plan and getting us set up for the first request for or call for requests. Travel includes per diem as well as travel for staff, which explains the large amount. That's budgeted on an estimate of $3,000 a meeting. I think it comes in a little bit less than that thus far, but that was the number provided by LCCMR and what I've been using for planning. So be advised that that may be a little generous. If there are any comments or questions,
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, a couple things. Bill, just to be clear, the salaries include benefits? These figures include benefits? Is that accurate?
They look to me like they do, yes.
And then the what's missing is rent.
Right.
And it's my understanding that that is not to be considered as part of the cost because of the arrangement that is customary and usual where the legislature makes an appropriation to the Department of Administration for payment in lieu of rent. Mr. Huebinger is nodding to that, so if anyone's wondering about that. And then just to be also clear in my own mind, Bill, the consultant contracts would include the facilitators in that process.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just to clarify, any unexpended money from the $705,000 that has been appropriated in this fiscal year just stays in the fund? It goes back from an account to the fund? Or what are the mechanics of that, Bill?
The funds are available for two fiscal years of the biennium. So the unspent money rolls forward to the next fiscal year and will be taken into consideration when the administrative account is assembled for the next set of recommendations.
Okay. Jim?
I just had a question, Bill, on the term project analyst. What do we have in mind there? Is that
someone to assist in looking into particular potential recommendations, generating programs, assisting in the editing, review, and that sort of thing of materials that come to you so that they're in better shape than they have been recently. That kind of work. So it's the chief content assistant for the executive.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
No.
I'm aware, I should have reported on the last agenda item, but I'm aware that a contract is being worked on between the LCC and the MR to maintain a service level during the time that we're in the process of hiring someone beginning into the next fiscal year. I don't know that that's into this budget or not, and built into this or not. So we'll have an expense that may include that at some point.
And when we get a number, we'll add a line.
Right. And the other point I would also make, Mr. Chair, is that I think that it would be realistic for council to expect that, notwithstanding the great work that is on this piece of paper, whoever it is that's selected as the executive director will undoubtedly have ideas, hopefully good ones, about proper staffing and a work plan and so forth that would go forward. So this is certainly a legitimate and good starting point, but potentially subject to change.
Right. And I think importantly, you know, we don't have that authority. You know, the budget rests with the LCC. I think we would, this is a suggested budget to the LCC, but obviously they are the ones that are in control of our budget. And so we would, just formally submitting this, I'm assuming, Bill, via a letter to Greg, the executive director of the LCC, just saying, here's our suggested budget for fiscal year 2010. But in terms of us formally adopting it, we really don't have that authority anymore, other than just saying this looks good and this seems to be in line with our thinking as a council. But the buck stops, so to speak, with the LCC. Any other comments or questions about the administrative budget? Okay, if not, let's move into item number 6, which is the accomplishment plan. That's the large document. It is about 100 pages, 115 to be exact. Bill, do you want to just explain a little bit about what we are looking for, and then we can talk about a process we can use to go through and deal with this report?
The accomplishment plan is the major tool that the council has to ensure that the appropriations made on its recommendations are carried out as they were proposed to the council, and to ensure that the recipient of the appropriations is accountable for the public money and the product that will come out of the expenditure of public money, and is a key document in terms of transparency of what the commission is doing. If you remember House File 1231, there were a number of places where it was required that accomplishments be recorded and reports that are provided to the various councils be submitted to finance and others. And these are the major reports that the council will use to manage its program. Let me just go through the arrangement. The document begins with a table of contents of sorts on page 1. You'll notice, we'll just start right off, that this is in the order of the bill as the projects were listed and contains the appropriation language under each title. So as you go through this document, if you are curious as to what the appropriation language said, that's where you find it. You may also note that some of these have page numbers and some do not. Accelerated Prairie and Grassland Management does not. That's because it wasn't turned in. And the Department of Natural Resources would like until August to get it in shape so that their list of acquisitions can be as accurate as possible. The majority of these are listed in order in the document itself, except for the Prairie Heritage Fund, which came in Friday, I believe, and I just had time to put it at the end of the document, so that's why it's at 107. I want to take you to an example, and I think we'll use the very first one in page 10. You'll notice we have the asset allocation chart, and table 1, which begins on page 9, shows what the target is for this particular program. As they record status during the year in biennium, this will change, and they will report what they have actually acquired, restored, protected, enhanced. That being said, I have looked through this document, and with a couple of exceptions, find it the documents in here to be in fairly good, in good shape and ready for approval. Let me take you to the cold water project, which is on page 75, and it had one item in it that I wanted to point out that was a little unusual to me, and it's in the detail on page 81 under the Lawndale project number 3. And our statutes indicate that our recommendations have to directly protect, restore, and enhance the resources that are the target resources. And this one is unusual in that the very last line indicates that part of the protection and the money that's being appropriated here is to replace a source of irrigation water, which is the creek that's being restored, using a well pump upgrade and piping for the neighboring landowner. And I've looked into this, and this is a situation where, but for this purchase, the entire restoration, which is being done primarily by DNR with their funds, would not be done. The appropriation of water has to stop before the restoration is done. The pump and piping are required for the appropriation to stop. The landowner will relinquish his appropriation permit upon receipt of the replacement water. So I wanted you to be knowledgeable about that. I know that some members may have questions about other plans. I'll just say that it's fair game to amend these before we approve them. It is also fair game to not approve them and ask a plan author to come in at our next meeting and discuss in more detail. With that being said, I would suggest, but it's up to you, obviously, Mr. Chair, that you may want to entertain a motion for the package and then remove from the package items that you want to have brought in later and then discuss the package as a whole.
Thank you, Bill. David.
Question. Yeah. Just in reviewing this, there's nothing about the Emerald Ash 4 project that was tacked on. Is that because they don't have a plan yet, or?
Yes.
Okay. I just didn't see it mentioned in the table.
Yeah. Chair.
Yep. Bob?
I happened to run into Assistant Commissioner Joe Martin from the Department of Agriculture yesterday at the Clean Water Council meeting, and he indicated they have been forming a work group to address that $2 million appropriation, and I reminded him of the obligation on the council that he was aware of.
And just keep in mind, members, that per the House File 1231, money cannot be expended from the Outdoor Heritage Fund until after the council has approved these work funds, and including the Emerald Ash Borer appropriation that isn't in the section where these are in the bill, but it was stated on the House and the Senate floor that they too, the people managing that appropriation would have to be subject to the same provisions of developing an accomplishment plan, a work plan that would be approved by the council before $1 was spent. I guess here's how I propose we proceed. First of all, any general... Oh, I'm sorry, Jim.
Just one quick question. I don't see the WPA accomplishment plan in here either, Bill. Is that,
yeah, that's not good either.
That's correct.
Well,
it was not received in time to put it in the package,
right,
and so it'll be up in July.
I propose that we, first of all, have any additional questions of clarity to Bill about what this is, what we're going to be acting on this afternoon, and then after that, whether we do it the way Bill suggested or just, what I'd like to do is identify the work programs or the accomplishment plans that we need to have further discussion or there's some concern or question about, and we pull those aside, and then we can adopt the remaining ones as a package. Assuming that by doing so that we're comfortable with the information in there. And, of course, this is a living document, as Bill said, that we will be getting additional information likely at almost every meeting as work progresses through the next 3 years. And then we can take up those particular accomplishment plans for specific projects where one or more members have questions about, and we can deal with those individually. If that's okay with you, that would be what I would propose. Some nods of the head one way or another. That sounds like a plan. Okay. First question is, are there any other just general questions about what the accomplishment plans are or how they're used in the process or what requirements the project recipients are compelled to through these accomplishment plans? Bob.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, so just from a process standpoint, if the council approves an accomplishment plan, then I presume that there'll some notifications made to the Department of Finance or the particular agency that we have met the obligations under the law to approve the accomplishment plan, that money then is available to the recipients to initiate their work in accordance with all the other requirements of the law. Is that accurate?
That is correct. By letter, we notify the agencies, including finance, and the recipients themselves. And for any pass-through project, we will require that a copy of the notification letter be appended to the agreement so that it's clear as to when the expenditures that are reimbursable can start. So, for example, if we all of those that will pass today, they can begin expending July 1st.
So,
Bob?
Mr. Chair, then this accomplishment plan is effectively a contract and offer an acceptance in some respects, not in the strict sense of illegal, but I mean, this is a plan that the recipient is committing to fulfill.
That's correct. In fact,
and they will be. Excuse me, they'll be. They'll get a copy of the letter to the Department of Finance or the agency, pendant to which will be the accomplishment plan, effectively the contract. And when they accept the dollar, they have accepted the contract.
Mr. Chair, Bob, that's correct. I'd like to point out one more thing. We have not sat down with the pass-through administrator to discuss the agreement yet. That's to be done. I intend to encourage the pass-through administrator to reference this document and extract from this document for the deliverables that would be in the agreement so that there is more definition that is provided simply in the appropriation itself.
Greg?
I want to make one point. I'd be hesitant to call the accomplishment plan a contract. I think the contract is through the fiscal agents or the agencies that are involved. I mean, you could maybe call it an implied contract, whatever, but
it's a promise.
You don't really have the ability to contract for expenditure because you're a legislative group and not an executive branch. And so I'd be hesitant to actually call them a contract. What they are, what your expectations are from the project proposal. And then, as I understand it, they pay a contract with the agency. Well, Bill, do you know more about that tonight?
Bill, in response to that?
I agree with Greg. I think that the effort here is to, for the accountability portions of this, to perfect them into the agreement that goes through the agency. So that's to be kept in mind as we look at these.
Great. Jim? Bill, maybe you've already answered this question. I didn't understand it, but if we okay these accomplishments plans and everybody shows up and starts looking for money immediately, I mean, how are we going to allocate this money if it comes in over the 12 months? I mean, do we just open the doors and everyone grabs, or is there going to be some kind of timely?
Mr. Chair, Jim, that's an excellent question, and it may take a somewhat lengthy response. First of all, inherent in the bill that we prepared are a number of triggers. For example, reimbursement of expenditures cannot occur before November 1st. So while they can incur expenses as of July 1st or the approval date of the approval plan, whichever is later, they cannot be reimbursed for those until November the 1st. I might add that because of a quirk in the system, agencies can begin expending immediately. But that's just the way the system works. We have analyzed and did initially what we thought the cash flow would be out of the accounts on a macro level, a large level. We expect that there may be some borrowing. Depending on what account it is borrowed from, there are provisions in the law to pay interest, and we discussed that earlier. And the interest on a very, very conservative estimate, which would make the interest as high as possible, I believe the figure was $44,000 we might end up paying in interest. There is another process that's taking place that actually mimics what we did at the macro level in the Department of Finance, where each manager of an appropriation is filling out a monthly cash flow plan, and those will be analyzed by finance, and the Commissioner of Finance, or MMB, if it's formal yet, the commissioner has the authority to borrow for cash flow purposes but is not required to do it. So being able to expend is based on our being able to do that kind of borrowing. One other item that's important to know is that these funds will be allotted, and then the allotments will be basically closed. So the money's in the system, but it's unavailable until finance provides the cash flow authority.
So Bill, Jim, I think the short answer is it's going to be managed, the cash flow will be largely managed by the Department of Finance. Jim,
one just follow-up question. Do all these people that that we're going to fund, do they understand this? I mean, has everybody been brought up to speed on this?
They are certainly up to speed on the November 1st deadline, and we anticipate enough cash in the accounts by November 1st to take care of any expenditures that might have occurred prior to then.
Wes?
I think most of the questions are answered, but on the Conservation Partners grant program, it's in progress, but the DNR will manage it for the first year and make the recommendations from the $4 million allocation under 1231 and the council will just approve the plan after they make the decision. Is that correct?
We have an update, actually, after we approve these work plans. Specifically, Dave Shad, Director of Fish and Wildlife for the DNR, who's responsible for developing the program, is going to give us an update as to where they are. But they, too, will have an accomplishment plan that will be submitted to the council for approval before money can be expended from that fund, just like all the other projects or programs. Any other questions? Oh, Tom, we're very informal. So,
good.
Senator, you are now Tom for the next 3 hours.
Yesterday I was at Mead and Iron Range Resources where there was four Toms around the table. But when we're talking about the forest project and the fact that now that the two pieces are in place for the state appropriation, it's true that then that the $36 million wouldn't have to be paid till 12/31/2010. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
Right.
And that should help cash flow to some extent, too.
Right.
That we're counting on.
Right. So keep in mind, members, any use of this appropriation for purposes of an acquisition, either through title or easement, is good for 3 years. 2 years or 3 years.
Three years for acquisition.
Yeah, 3 years for acquisitions and I think 2 years or whatever for enhancement restoration work. Any other just general questions before we get into
Bill? A general question for information, maybe for the public that's here. How many total projects are we talking about here that are being funded? I know Ducks Unlimited has X amount, Pheasants Forever have X amount, and I think that number was thrown out at one time, but I just can't remember. Do we know?
18.
Yeah, there were 18 projects. Those are the ones we recommended. The 19th is the Conservation Program, Conservation Partners Small Grants Program, and the 20th, which is one we did not recommend, is the plant pest, the Emerald Ash Borer $2 million appropriation. So there are actually 20 different appropriations that will be made from the Outdoor Heritage Fund in fiscal year 2010.
Mr. Chair, of those appropriations, then there's different projects.
Yes,
is what I'm talking about.
Oh boy, that's so, into the dozens to hundreds. I mean, okay. Bowser alone
just so we're clear that there's lots of projects that are being funded, not just 19 projects.
Yeah, well, right. To the extent that the accomplishment plan is complete, they should be listed. But for example, the WRP RIM program will acquire roughly 6,500 acres across roughly 65 projects alone, just that one. And so then you look at the AMA, the WMA, the WPA acquisitions. You know, we're talking dozens of acquisitions there. So, yeah, it'll probably be into the three digits by the time all is said and done in terms of different projects that are out on the ground. Any other questions? Members, what I'd like to do is identify one or more of the accomplishment plans that are here that you do not feel comfortable approving without some discussion and resolution. And so we'll set those aside, and I'd like to at least, once we identify those, set those aside and then act on the remaining ones that are in this packet. And we'll make sure we enumerate those. That can basically be almost a consent calendar. We can just have a motion to approve these work plans as submitted. Again, sans the ones we pulled aside that we need further discussion and clarification and action on. Bill, or Bob.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if you would mind if we could possibly do that in reverse. I'd like to identify those that we think we need to talk about and talk about those, because we may find that there are some thinking or decisions that we make in those particular cases that might apply to those that we think right now we don't have any issue with. If we approve those we don't have an issue with, then we could potentially make a precedent decision on some others that...
That's a very good suggestion. Let's do that. Let's identify the ones that we need to have some conversation about. Once we've exhausted those items and we've come to agreement on what to do, then we can take up the package of the remaining ones. Because, as you said, there may be some things we didn't think about that we need to address. Wayne.
Chair, would it be appropriate to restart up with a motion to accept the package the way it is so we can have a discussion each one?
Would be okay.
That would be okay. I mean, we're talking about different ways of skinning this cat. That's fine. We just somehow need to get an identification of which ones we want to have further discussion on. And I'm thinking for the ones where there is some discussion, Wayne and members, I'd like to take that one individually, because I think we need to have a motion on individual projects. Because I know there are a couple that I'm a bit uncomfortable with. Les?
Are we going to talk about the uncomfortable ones?
If that's okay with you, I'd like to identify those. Yeah.
I'd like to start out with 35, the Rum River Creek Initiative on page 2. I'm wondering if we're looking at the appropriation with about 2006 prices. And one of the things that bothers me on the Cedar Creek Rum River is we're protecting one side of the river, not the other side of the river. I think we need to look at that a little bit closer and look to see what that project really is and whether we're getting our best bang for a buck in that particular project.
Okay, great. Other projects that you want to specifically talk about, Bill?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but the Emerald Ash Borer situation, I know it's changed an awful lot since we last met. Is there any more discussion there? Do we look at funding that, or is that those dollars going to be available for? And I'm not exactly sure how that's being expended.
So as you look through this packet, there is no information.
No, there is no information. I understand that. So you just want to talk about
what's in the packet. So, for example, we won't have the accomplishment plan on the small grants program because that isn't available yet. We will not be talking about the WPA program, item C on page 3 at the top, because, as Jim pointed out, it was to be delivered to us on the 12th of this month. We never received it. So we're only going to be talking about those accomplishment plans that are in the packet dated June 15th, 2009. Bob?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to, there are three things I'd like to talk to you about a little further, just to get some more information perhaps. That would be the first project that's on page 7 of the Green Corridor Legacy Program.
Okay.
Second one is the one that Mr. Becker mentioned before. It's on, well, the specific point is on page 81 regarding the pump. I'd like to just talk about that as well.
Okay.
And the last project, dealing with the Albert Lee
Fountain Lake,
That page is
100.
Page 100. That's not the last project. So I'd add those.
Okay. So we've got the Rim River Cedar Creek, Green Corridors Legacy Program, TU Project, and Fountain Lake Project. Dave.
I just would love some help with the accelerated wetland WMA acquisition, because I don't know what the additional budget items are, and maybe I just couldn't catch it, but just understanding that would be helpful.
Page.
That's
page
49. Page 50. There's $55,000 in fiscal year 10 and $20,000 in fiscal year 11. It's probably fine, but I'd just feel better if I knew what it was. And then I'm curious about the accelerated shallow lake enhancements and easements, page 58. The personnel cost of $226,000 in 10 and $40,000 in 11. It seems high. I'm willing to accept it's not high, but I'd like to at least hear some rationale for why it is what it is.
Okay, so just members, to be clear, there are two shallow lake projects. You're talking about item B, which is the $2.528 million appropriation. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Others? Any others? Okay, so we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got on my count 6 projects that we need some further discussion on, and I think the best way to do this, if you council members are okay, just take these one by one, and at the conclusion of that conversation, we can have a motion to decide how to dispose of the accomplishment plan, either approve it as modified, or return it to the proposer for further clarification. I think those are the three options, Bill?
Right. I think we have representatives here for all of them except for the cold water project, assuming Mr. Shad can represent the DNR's project.
So Fountain Lake representatives are
here? No, they're not here either. I take that back.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's start out in the order that these projects were identified. So, Les, you identified the Rum River Cedar Creek accomplishment report. Could you talk a little bit about the concern you have, and hopefully we can get some clarification?
The price tag on that amounts to about $8,500 an acre. And, again, we're protecting, there's 350-some acres. Let me get to the actual.
So, members, just so everyone is clear that they know the pages that we're working from, we're starting on page 35.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Les.
The problem is around the buffer of that project, we've got 500-foot barrier, so the actual open hunting and fishing drops down to about 224 acres. even though we're looking at 550 acres. And I'm concerned that we're only protecting one side of the river, and there's a quite extensive corridor there that if on the other side of the river, whether that's wetlands and can't be developed, or if there's houses that could be pushed up against that river on the other side and create a no-hunting zone in the other side. So I guess I would like to see that property and just see if we are a little bit overpriced on the acquisition price and whether it's a really good acquisition as far as a project that we want to look at.
Because it's an appropriation.
Greg, do you want to comment on just the no hunting or that setback? I think that was really
my understanding. Mr. Shad is here, and we know more about this than I do. And I don't have in front of me the 500 you're talking about are trespass law, but that doesn't apply to public lands.
Don't we have that problem up in Anoka County already in Carlos Avery, where the houses are backing up to Carlos Avery and claiming a 500-foot trespass?
I don't know about specific examples. I just know what I read in the trespass law. The trespass law tells me that it only applies for houses, basically, in the right-of-way. If you're on the public right-of-way, you can't do it, or if you're on private land. But as far as I know, on public land, there is no 500-foot limitation.
Dave, welcome. Dave Shad, you want to just step up to the, or pull your chair up to the large table and introduce yourself and help see if you can clarify?
Well, this is second grade.
Dave Shad, Director of the Fish and Wildlife Division from DNR, and Greg is correct in that interpretation. That 500-foot restriction on discharge applies, if you're on private land, it applies to the neighboring private land. If you're on a road right away, it applies to that neighboring private land, but it does not restrict your ability to discharge firearms on adjacent public land.
Scott?
And I agree with Mr. Shad. Obviously, he knows I do agree with him. I'm familiar. But the 500-foot setback that Les is talking about, that was instituted by the county, not by the state. Well, so when they presented that plan, when they said that this is going to be in our county, and we're going to open this acquisition for hunting, but they instituted their own 500-foot setback from the property, not from a state perspective, but from a county perspective.
Greg, sure, it was my understanding that they were misreading the trespass law, and they said that that's the way it would apply,
right.
And that was the way they sold it to the locals. And they were, I mentioned it there, and they were basically corrected on that.
Okay.
I don't know what happened since then, though. I don't know, because they had kind of sold it as that if they acquired this, that there would be this 500 setback, because according to law, they have to have it. I don't know if they're going to do anything, or if they did anything else with the people who live in the area to make sure that they understood that that wasn't going to be the case. Because you got to remember that this land is open to the taking of even fish during the open season unless otherwise provided by law. And this would not be otherwise provided by law. So I don't think that they could even do that unless they got... There's some allowance for the commissioner to close areas, but I don't think they can do that on their own.
Yeah. Wayne?
What happens, though, after the purchase? And they decide to institute a 500-foot rule.
Mr. Chair, yeah, great. I think that would be a problem because, it's open unless otherwise provided by law. Yeah. The way you wrote the law, only the Commissioner of Natural Resources can do
that. Right. And remember that.
Because of local jurisdiction, have resolution.
Well, you do have constitutional restrictions on this money, so this land will be open.
Dave?
I just mentioned we've had this discussion with local communities about whether they have the authority to limit hunting within their boundaries, and they don't. The state clearly has that exclusive authority. They do have authority to limit discharge of firearms, which kind of indirectly could limit hunting activities specifically, and they can do that for only certain purposes. Mostly it's a public safety purpose. So, but they can't pass a law to limit hunting. Only the state can do that.
But the discharge?
The discharge.
EMS is
a backlog.
Yes, Les?
Dave, are you familiar with the property? The concern also is that only one side of the river is protected and the other side isn't. And I think we're paying full development potential price for this property. And I think it's an appraisal.
Yeah. Let me just clarify here. The purpose of these accomplishment plans is not to second-guess our appropriations that the legislature made. It's to make sure that the material that's in these accomplishment plans meets the requirements that we have so that we can authorize them to move forward. It's not our job to second-judge or second-guess whether these are the right appropriations or whether it should be a different parcel. That decision has already been made. It's simply have the project proposers given us the information sufficient to meet the law and our level of comfort that we can authorize them to move forward with this project. And with that, Dave and then Darby.
Well, that was my point. I mean, they're going to have to deal with the appraisal rules in terms of what they pay for the purchase of this, but we can't go back and second guess whether or not this is the right thing at this point. We made the decision, the legislature has endorsed it. I don't think we have the power to go back and question it at this point.
No.
Mr. Chair, can I just add, you really don't have the power to go back and second guess.
Right. Darby?
Yeah, I was just going to ask for clarification whether we are reevaluating a project or whether we are evaluating an accomplishment plan. There's a clear distinction.
Absolutely.
Clear.
Okay. Are there any further comments or questions or concerns about this one? If not, I would entertain a motion then. We can take these up one at a time. A motion to approve this accomplishment plan for the Rim River / Cedar Creek Conservation Area as drafted. We have a motion on the table. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So this accomplishment plan has been approved. The next one is the Green Corridors Legacy Program, and Bob, you were one that raised that one, so I guess I would ask or defer to you, if you would, to speak to that, and I think there are some other council members that may have some things to say as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair, on page 7 of our packet, page 9, if you members will remember that this is a project that takes place in Redwood County. There are two acquisitions that will be taking place combined for 600 acres, if I remember right. One block, 476 acres, and the other 140. That is part of existing work that has been going on in Redwood County that I think we have some familiarity with. And my concern, I know Mr. Cobb is here, was the personnel and contract costs associated with this project, which is at the top of page 9. Got $38,500 in personnel costs and $40,425 in contract costs for two projects, a total of $78,000, almost $79,000, seemed a little bit high to me. And so I want to flag that and find out a little bit more. I know that there are many other projects where we have personnel in here that I think are much more specifically stated as to how they will be used, specifically for lawyers or for accountants and so forth. So I think it might be helpful to us to learn a little bit more about how this works.
And we do have Brad Cobb here, who's the project manager for this project. Brad, if you would, please come on up to the table. Again, if you could just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Brad Cobb. I'm the contract project manager for the Green Corridor Legacy Program. And I'll try to answer Mr. Trader's question as best as possible. I have to point out, however, that I do not have a representative of the Southwest Initiative Foundation here today to maybe address some specific questions that I might not be able to answer or to satisfy your question. And I'm kind of a pack rat, and I actually happen to have this document in my briefcase, and this is a document of some questions that was presented to me in email form back in, I think it was in February. I don't have a date on it, but I actually, and my guess is that it was some specific questions that came from your work as a result of compiling your original recommendations. One of the questions that was raised was that question about specific uses for contract dollars and salaries, and it was actually item number 4, and I could actually forward this back to Bill if he did not save it. Subsequent to this email that I received, and we tried to express in that email where some of these dollars, but at that point it was for our original appropriation, which was, I think it was for $4.85 million, and we went in with about a 5% administration or contract service application. But I think some of these discussion things could be, are still applicable, and I'd be glad to read some of these off for the record, or if they had a specific question, you know, I could certainly do that as well. We did have a conference call with Mr. Becker, with the representatives from the Southwest Initiative Foundation. We had a 4-way conference call. And at that point, we identified a 5% administration to cover that grant. And with that 5%, we roughly split the administration on a 55%, 45% split. And you know, to pertain to the work activities associated to that. Some of the things that we originally had identified that we would like to accomplish with our administration was public relations, plan development, program development. But as it was so eloquently, you know, told to me by Mr. Becker, that those things, those costs, aren't directly related to protect, enhance, and restore of the Game and Fish Fund. So we excluded some of those activities out of our accomplishment plan, but they will be ongoing activities that will not be subject to a reimbursement request. So I don't know if that...
Well, let me be a little bit more specific then. Just so I understand, you've got two parcels that you're going to acquire,
yep,
and you're already in the process of doing the appraisals on those parcels, or at least one of them, correct?
We've identified, we're actually starting to look at a roundup of appraisals or companies that could handle our appraisals. So, we would like to start that. In fact, we'd like to start that work on July 1st.
So you've got two parcels that are going to be acquired.
Yep.
And as I read it, there's no habitat work or restoration. It's just you're going to acquire the parcels and then turn those parcels over to the Department of Natural Resources to be incorporated in the WMA program,
that
right?
That is correct.
So I think the question, Brad, boils down to the amount of time that's allocated to the acquisition of two parcels. For example, you've got an accountant, 0.2 FTE. You know, if you use a 2,000-hour per year figure, that's 400 hours for an accountant to manage two acquisitions. And the same thing for a grants officer, that's roughly 700 hours of billable time for administering two acquisitions. And then the third one on your consultant program manager, what would that entail? I think those are the questions that at least I had, and I don't know if other members had, but we need more detail because, you know, 700 hours for a grants officer seems fairly, really high.
I'm sorry, I don't know what your salary is. It's priceless. but if you were making 8,000 hours a year, this would take you 6 months to acquire the two properties. Travel costs of almost $2,000 for travel that would be too far from where you and others work. So it's those things together.
Yeah, I'm gonna, if you don't mind, I guess I'm gonna try to read a couple of things to try to address the fiscal agent side of that first equation first. The responsibilities of the Southwest Initiative Foundation would be for administration of staff and infrastructure to support the grant. It's crucial to have a base to manage a large public project, and within that project there are some internal structures and staff people that are going to support that. Again, I'm reading this from an email back in February. There's going to be independent audit in financial structures associated to that to provide the transparency and oversight to inspect the use of these state funds. SWIFT will also provide some operating overhead, which is identified in their in-kind services. And in short, they are a 501(c) designation with 23 years of experience. They also have an oversight or a dedicated board of directors with a diverse experience. in the commitment to the southwest region of Minnesota.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Bob.
No offense, but I don't buy a lot of that.
Okay.
You know, really, I think, it, and maybe there's some more, I would feel comfortable, Mr. Chair, if we just did a little homework on this.
Yeah, I think.
I don't want to walk out.
Yeah, I know we've got a lot of projects. I too, am not comfortable with kind of the information we have. And one suggestion is just to ask Mr. Cobb, as the project manager, to come back with more detail that would justify, and particularly, I guess, as part of that, we could certainly have Bill do a benchmark about how those costs compare to other acquisition costs. In general, I mean, it just seems to me that the $400 for an accountant, $700 roughly for a grants officer for two acquisitions, when there's going to be no land management work, it's just a fee title transfer, seems pretty high. And I wouldn't be comfortable signing off on this accomplishment report until I had more information. But I'd like to hear from other members. Darby?
I'll do it for less.
Darby?
Yeah, I really share the concerns. It really does look pretty lopsided, and I think we're going to need to hear some more.
So, Brad, what we're saying is we need you to be able to, first of all, justify the time you have, but the time that you present here has to be in line with what other acquisition costs would normally be, so I would suggest consulting with Dave Shad and his crew and other folks, Dave Hartwell down at the end of the table, or who are you pointing to?
Finish your comment. I got my hand up. That's all.
I can't read minds that well. But and also, you know, on the contract, the consultant program manager, what are the responsibilities that would be entailed as part of that? Just so that council members know, and break that out. We would rather have more information than less. With that, Bill.
Mr. Chair, just to that point, during all of our proposals, I do remember somebody coming up with a land acquisition cost. And I looked at Tom when I said that, but he wasn't involved. But I think it had something to do with maybe the forestry projects. But nevertheless, there is a benchmark out there to go by.
Good, great. Jim,
Mr. Chair, could it be possible, Brad, that they're using these numbers from your original application, which was for like
those are adjusted numbers that we just revised this past whenever I submitted the document last Wednesday.
So I would
David.
Move that we take no action on this today and send it back for more information.
Okay. Yeah, motion on the table. Yes, Bob.
Is there a substantial consequence to waiting for council until July?
No. You know, the sooner that we can start, obviously, with the appraisal work and get that moving forward. But, you know, I understand that we can't do any work until, you know, the accomplishment plan is approved.
So we have a more.
I have a follow-up question.
David?
What is the appraisal cost?
They're built into the. They'll come out of the acquisition side of the funding.
Okay.
Which is pretty typical.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table to defer any action on this and remand the accomplishment plan back to Mr. Cobb for more detailed information about personnel and travel costs. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Next one is the TU project, the Trout Unlimited project. And Bill, you had talked about, I think it was the pump on page, was it 70?
81. Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Bob?
Sorry, this is one that I don't know. My place. There may not be any action necessarily, but I'm mindful. I want to be sure we are aware. I can't. Some 11 of the bill was passed. It says a capital equipment expenditures in excess of $10,000 is included as part of the accomplishment plan. And I wonder if this record wants to have a sense of how this fits in with that obligation, and also, as I think I understand it, in effect, this project is buying the pump. And if that is the case, who's buying the electricity forever?
Bill?
Mr. Chair, Councillor Schroeder, the landowner will buy the electricity. We're buying pump and pipe, which is one capital expenditure together. It does fall under the $10,000 or above the $10,000 limit, is my information. And could be as much as $65,000. The reason I point this out is that it's one degree away from actually protecting the stream. However, I want to indicate that there are other similar costs that are allowable. For example, professional services for engineering and design that are required and enable the project to be done are considered to be direct to the project. Because this is a situation of but for the pump and the pipe, the project doesn't go, I think it falls in that category, that it is as direct as a professional services engineering cost or something like that.
Well, members, I have a suggestion that might be an easy fix to this. That is, if you look on page 78, you look at the in-kind dollar. Excuse me, not in-kind. These are leveraged dollars, not only from Trout Unlimited, National Fish Habitat Action Plan, LCCMR, MNDNR, Minnesota DNR. It seems to me that, so we aren't, if we're concerned about the use of outdoor heritage funds for the pump, which, as Bill said, is one step away but a necessity to protect, enhance, and restore, that we direct the project proposer to acquire the pump and the whatever else, casing or whatever,
piping
through one of these other non-outdoor heritage funds. And I guess Dave Shad is here, and I don't know exactly, Dave, what source of money you're looking for from the Minnesota DNR, and if there's any ability to use those funds for that type of purpose for this project.
Yeah, I'm not real sure. We're going to have to do some checking on that. I don't know if those are just in-kind dollars, or I think there's both in-kind and project dollars there. And I'm not sure of the source of funding, so I'm going to have to get back in.
So, okay, Jim.
Mr. Chair,
this is hard.
One thing I'd like to bring up, and I think Mr. Shad can verify this, but when we start doing wetland restorations, I can guarantee you we're going to run into private drainage systems that we're going to have to replace or repair, or, I mean, even landowners we didn't even know we were going to be dealing with. I mean, we're going to get into a situation like this quite often where we're going to have to do some, make some capital expenditures just to make these projects work. And as long as it's, you know, part of the project, I have no problem with funding some of this, especially when it's under the $10,000.
It would be more.
Okay.
It would be $65,000. Dave? I'm sorry, you had your hand up?
I would think one way we could do this, if we wanted to, is approve a change as you were recommending, and just take the extra $65,000 out of the Trout Unlimited contribution, and then they could come back if there were any issue, so that they would have an approved plan today. And that little piece, we could adjust the plan, and at least they'd have something to go forward. But I'm also willing to go along with the fact that we're going to see a lot of this kind of stuff, and that if it makes the project work, it's still part of the project.
Let's see. Bill, just in direct response to that, or we have some other hands?
Go ahead.
We have Wayne and then Scott.
It's my belief that under a permitting system, there is no guarantee that they get to continue to draw water. It's only if the water level is adequate. Is that correct?
Is this a question for Mr. Shad?
I'm not.
Well,
not really.
I believe that's what it is. When you get a DNR, an irrigation permit from a public water, it's only if the water is available. So we're actually doing is we're taking an unguaranteed source of water, and by putting in the irrigation system, we're creating a guaranteed source of water. So there actually is a benefit to the producer by getting that as well, the landowner. So I would much prefer that we took it out of another source of funds that doesn't appear as though we are buying somebody a guaranteed source of water.
Okay. Scott and then Bill.
My question became moot.
Great. Bill? I think in direct response to Dave's suggestion.
I think that you can just add a phrase on page 81 to the sentence that ends via a well pump upgrade in piping by adding comma using leveraged funds or leverage funds. And that would instruct them to take the cost of that out of the leverage.
I wish we had. Sure wish we had a TU person here. Okay.
You know what, they can always come back and say, can we amend the accomplishment plan that you approved if we create some huge dilemma we haven't thought about, and then we can talk about the issue more?
Yep. Yes, Dave.
We'll work with TU to try to figure this out. I mean,
great.
We've got resources within the agency. This is a but I think Jim's right. We're going to run into this kind of situation where we get a project done. We're going to have to work with the landowner and make it happen.
Well, my question comes down to is, the issue is the pump is $65,000. It's a capital expenditure over $10,000. But as long as that's disclosed to us and we approve it anyway, it doesn't really matter where the funds come, correct? As long as that capital expenditure has been in the open and approved by us. Because no more than $10,000 can be allocated to capital expenditure unless it's identified in the accomplishment plan, correct?
Right.
Which these now are.
Right. I think the issue is, at one level, it is all in the name of protect, enhance, restore. The question is, would someone else interpret it differently, that this is buying something other than protect, enhance, restore? Bill, I know you had a comment.
Well, I think that we should just make sure that it's on the record that this doesn't establish a precedent that we will not fund other items that are integral to the Protect Restore project. So long as they're integral to it, we're willing to fund them.
Right. Wayne?
Motion to approve the project with that change in their using leverage funds.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table to approve the work plan for the formal title. Is Trout Unlimited Cold Water Fish Habitat Restoration and Enhancement Program with the change using leverage funds inserted on the second to the last section under item number 3 on page 81. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Work plan is approved. And again, you know, Dave, as you work through, just let us know. And, of course, Trout Unlimited needs to come back and tell us if this is going to be a problem. We don't want to hold up their work, but we also are sensitive to these. Okay. Fountain Lake is the next one.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that was one that I...
Yes.
And just as a sidebar, I'm sorry, page 100 through like 105. I know we do a lot to inform the public about our meetings and the agenda and so forth. And I'm thinking next time we go through the accomplishment plans, probably let them point. I'm happy to help on this so that the grant participants know that we're going to go through these plans in advance so that they can join us if they can. Probably a good idea. But anyway, I had a couple of issues on this one. On page 101, about two-thirds of the way down, it's a circle. The first circle, it has at the end of it, it says reintroduce game fish, sunfish, crappie, bass, and northerns. So it appears from this that the project includes stocking. Mm-hmm. Then on page 103, under on the top part of the page, under enhance, there's a table. It says enhance, and on to the right of it, it says enhance the fish habitat and vegetation by reducing the rough fish population and introducing game fish and favorable aquatics. So that seems as if stocking will take place. So I have another point in this project, but specifically first, it's the issue of stocking. Right. And I am not convinced that that's necessarily constitutional. I have a concern about that. I think that we are stocking the game in the lake when, in fact, the Constitution requires us to protect, restore, and enhance habitat. So I want to hear what you have to say about that particular point.
Jim.
Mr. Chair, I took this as that they weren't necessarily doing that, and we're not paying for that. And I mean, legally, doesn't the Department of Natural Resources have to do that?
Yeah, and that may be the case. It wasn't clear. I hope you're right.
Bill.
Yeah, I've had conversations about this appropriation with these people, and if you check back on page 4 and 5, it's clear that the money can only be used for the barriers and that that's their intent. I think they got a little verbose in their description of what they were going to use the money for. I think for this point, it might be worthwhile to just make a note that the money is available only for the fish barriers and directly related services.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
Yep.
Are you recommending we strike that then in the accomplishment plan to make that clear?
Yes.
Okay. Just wondering what you were recommending.
Bill?
Mr. Chair, the stocking thing seems to be coming up, and maybe we need to have a little broader discussion on that. But if in fact the science says that stocking does enhance, aren't we accomplishing that? Is my guess. We're going to move forward with science-based information. If stocking does help, so I don't think we should just necessarily throw it out without some discussion. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So the focus is on the habitat, and. Mm-hmm. The enhancing is probably not so much the habitat, but the fishing opportunities.
Right. Yeah.
For stocking.
Yeah. Bob?
Yeah, I got involved in this deal when we put the appropriation there, and it was my understanding that the reason they had to stock the lakes is because the rough fish have completely taken over the lakes. They have killed them two or three times. The creeks and stuff bring the rough fish right back in there. They have already devastated all the aquatic plants. And the only way they can get it done is to be able to constantly be able to get the rough fish out through the fish traps. And I never came to my mind that they were going to stock fish with us. And I apologize because they weren't there, and I kind of took over from what I understood. I might have understood it wrong.
Bill, on that point?
I think that's exactly correct. They're not going to. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is going to do the stocking, but for the sake of clarity and to follow up on Councillor Hartwell's suggestion, I would say that if we move forward with this, that the motion includes striking everything on page 101 in the last line by the third circle on the page from population or from and on. So that the sentence would read, the fish barriers will be installed in cooperation with the City of Albert Lea and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources efforts to eradicate the existing carp population.
Let me add on to that. If you look, the three bullets up above that, the last sentence where it starts out, upon installation of the barriers, a treatment will be applied and water clarity will increase from a few inches to meters. The lake will then be stocked with game fish.
Strike that
as well.
Sentence.
And on 103, you strike the piece in the against and introducing game fish to favorable water.
Okay. Did you have another?
No, I was just going to say that I am mindful of Senator Engelbrecht's point that the issue of stocking, I think, is worthy of discussion broadly. Mm-hmm. I think the primary principle for me is I don't want to spend money we don't have to.
Right.
But there's no doubt in this case and in other cases, stocking is probably appropriate. If we can get somebody else to pay for it, then we don't have an issue, a constitutional question to begin with.
Okay.
And then also, Mr. Chair, I had another point on this particular project.
Yeah, please, Bob.
Yeah, and it says on page 105, we have exhibits 1, 2, and 3. Item number 2 in each of those indicates a feasibility study. Maybe Ms. Becker knows something about that. I guess I thought that had already been done.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Bill, please.
My recollection of my conversations with the managers of this project is that is not going to be paid for with this money, but again, just the barrier. And yes, they have been done, is my understanding.
Okay, so in the term that these are feasible. No study of whether or not they're feasible.
I think if you check on page 104, the milestones, you'll note that the project design, which is where the feasibility study would be most likely to occur, has been completed.
Yep.
So I think we can rest assured that the feasibility is not being paid for and this is a go project.
Thank you.
So maybe we should suggest striking feasibility study, those three places on page 105 that it shows up, so that there's complete clarity. Any further discussion on this one? not, I'd entertain a motion to adopt this work plan with the changes that have been made.
So moved.
Okay, any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Next one is the Accelerated Wildlife Management Area Acquisition on page 50. And I don't recall who raised this one. David, the floor is yours.
I may have missed it, but there's an additional budget items on page 50 in the budget for $55,000 in year 10 and $20,000 in year 11. And I didn't see anything in here that indicated what that was, and I'm just wondering if we know what that is.
Dave, can you help us out?
And I've got to apologize. Kim Hennings, our acquisition coordinator, who many of you may have worked with, he's on medical leave. He had a pretty serious stroke a few months ago, so we're kind of patching stuff together, and this isn't as clear as it should be. Those are professional service costs, and actually they're quite low in this case, in large part because the acquisitions that we intend to fund with these dollars are actually quite a long ways into the process here, and we've been using other sources of funding to pay for a lot of that upfront work that's necessary before we can actually acquire the land. Typically, these costs would run about 5% of the total acquisition.
That's all I was looking for. It's just what is it, not that that's unreasonable. I'd move approval of this.
All right. We have a motion on the floor to approve the accomplishment report for Accelerated Wetland WMA Acquisition. Further discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. The last one that we specifically identified was Shallow Lake Restoration and Enhancement. Dave, was that yours as well?
It was, and I was just asking for an understanding of what the personnel line item was on page 58.
Great. And John Schroeders is here from Ducks Unlimited. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome to Alexandria. I ironically happen to be a resident of Alexandria, so welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I don't know, John, if you've been following the conversation, but Mr. Hartwell had a question on page 56, I believe.
I have. Mr. Chairman.
58, I'm sorry, 58.
Thanks for the opportunity to clarify. Basically, that money includes, will fund engineering staff to deliver these eight large shallow lakes projects throughout the state. Basically, it costs money to get projects done. We employ professional engineers, licensed engineers, and construction management staff that when we hire contractors to do this work, we have a man on staff, man on site to see the project through to completion. The personnel amounts to approximately 10% of the total project budget, so I think it's reasonable from that perspective.
So the contracts line does not include any engineering work itself?
Correct.
That's directly just, we already decided what you need, go dig the hole.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, John.
Correct. What we do, the contracts is hired from private vendors. They're moving companies, large construction firms. The personnel is our staff to do the final engineering on those projects, get the bid packages out, have people on site to make sure it gets done right, and then one step before that, actually survey in the project site, so on and so forth.
That was my only question, which is clarifying, because in most places we've seen that under contract. So I'm fine approving this.
Any further questions on this project?
Mr. Chair,
sure.
If I could take the liberty of asking a question just for my own edification. The earlier discussion about capital expenditures made me a little nervous in the context, and I want to make sure that the council was aware that our contract will indeed include some potentially capital expenditures. It depends on how you define capital expenditures, but just as the previous work program regarding the fish barrier, some of our projects will be structural in nature. And I just wanted to make sure that was clarified because it'll exceed obviously $10,000.
Right. And just to be clear, we're certainly recognizing there will be capital expenditures. I think the ones that we flagged were ones where, you know, is it directly to protect, enhance, restore, or along that mission? So we acknowledge that there will be many capital expenditures along the way. Any further comments by members on that?
So So I would move approval of this and all the rest of the accomplishment plans that we haven't talked about.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor then to approve this work plan and all the remaining ones that are on the document entitled or dated June 15, 2009 that we have not yet addressed. Is everyone clear which ones those are? I want to make sure. Otherwise, Bill can go through and restate which ones. Everyone seems to be comfortable? Okay, great. So we have a motion on the floor to adopt the remaining work accomplishment plans in this packet. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. So we have all of these accomplishment plans except for the Green Corridors Legacy Project. Next item of business is an update from Dave Shad about the Conservation Partners Small Grants Program. Again, Dave, welcome back.
You've done. Working to flesh out how we would operate the Conservation Partners Grants Program, and we've put it together in the form of an accomplishment plan here. Apologies for not getting this to you before the meeting so you could take a look at it, but we literally were working right up to the last minute to pull this together. And maybe just a reminder of what was included in the legislation for this. It was set up as 1 year, given to DNR as a pilot project. We were provided 6.5% for administrative costs, which equates to $260,000 for the program. We're required to develop a report on the feasibility of establishing or creating a state fish and wildlife foundation to in the state to administer this program. And it's $4 million total, up to $400,000 for individual projects, a 1 to 10 match, and the dollars are actually available for expenditure by the grant recipients through June 30th of 2013. So we've got this basically a four-year window with which we need to look at trying to manage this program without any assurance that there'll be additional money coming after this first year. The proposal that you've got in front of you here kind of lays out, a lot of it is pulled from some of the language in the statute,
yes.
But I thought I could do is just walk you through this fairly quickly, point out some of the things that I think are of interest to the council here, and then we can open it up for discussion. First of all, we intend to administer this program through our Office of Management and Budget Services, which is administered by our Chief Financial Officer, Denise Anderson. So it won't be housed in the Division of Fish and Wildlife. It will be housed up in our OMBS Bureau, in part just to create a little separation from our division. And we'll be very involved in probably supporting and helping out a lot of these grant recipients get their projects pulled together and some of the decisions related to the granting. We've split this out into two different categories of projects. One focused on the bottom of page one on restoration and enhancement. And you can see that we're using the council's definitions for restore and enhance. And then a second category of projects focused on protection. Let's see, I won't go into a lot of detail there as far as what constitutes those projects. A lot of the text there relates to some of the language that was in statute about local ecotype C, restoration management plans, and so on, use of Minnesota Conservation Corps. On page three, under general program requirements, towards the top of the page, we would ask the grant recipients to plan to have their work completed by June 30th, 2012, which is 1 year before the statute requires these funds to be, or 1 year before the availability of those funds would dry up. That would give us the opportunity to actually extend that grant by another year if there were some circumstances that warranted it, or perhaps pull that money back and redirect it to another organization and make sure that we're still going to get that spent. But we thought we needed kind of a date certain there to make sure that we could make full use of these funds. Under the grant process, we would issue a request for proposals in late August, August 25th. We would include in that request for proposal criteria and requirements, including principles and criteria that the council established in their strategic plan. We would continue to accept those applications throughout the year, but we would have two dates in December and March where we would actually select projects and make decisions and get the money out the door. So groups, if they were interested, obviously, in that December grant period, would need to get their proposals in by a certain date in order for us to award at that time. But we would continue to accept those throughout the year, and even after March, in case a project fell through, we'd have a list of projects that we could fall back on and redirect funds to. Selection criteria, we pulled those 13 criteria directly out of the statute. We actually added on the top of page 4 the sentence right after the criteria there that we would make an effort to distribute the grants around the state so that we're not, you know, just doing prairie projects or just doing forest projects, but try to look at spreading that money around geographically, also spread it around by activity. And then distributing by funding level, that the intent there is to ensure that we're not just funding a bunch of big projects, that we're looking at smaller projects that might be proposed by smaller organizations that don't have the resources to come up with a big chunk of matching dollars up to that $400,000 grant. Let's see. We've got some reporting requirements in there. We would, October 15th each year, provide reports, accomplishment reports to the council and other entities. We would create a what we're calling a technical guidance committee to review these projects and recommend projects and funding levels. The commissioner would have the final say on which projects and at what amounts these would be funded, but our intent would be to put together a technical committee made up of representatives from various agencies and the university to provide some recommendations to the grant program and eventually to the commissioner. Let's see. Finally, the budget on the bottom of page 5. We would intend to track our costs based on a professional service rate of $60 an hour. That would provide enough funding for about 1.5 FTEs to get this program off the ground in 2010, starting on July 1st. Another 0.65 FTEs would carry over into 2011 to kind of take care of the details. And then based on this budget, we've got some unfunded liabilities in 11, 12, and 13. And again, there's a lot of uncertainty with this program, whether it's going to eventually rest with DNR or go to some other entity, a state or a national foundation, for example. And so at this point, we're really not sure what this program is going to cost us. A lot of that depends on what kind of interest there is in this program. If we get a lot of small organizations that need a lot of hand-holding and a lot of assistance in putting their grants together and getting these dollars out the door, this could be a pretty expensive program to run. If it tends to run towards fewer, larger grants with the more established nonprofits that have paid staff, then the administrative requirements are going to be less. So we're not real sure what these costs are going to be, but we do think that there's some unfunded tails, especially in 12 and 15, as we continue to monitor those grants and address the needs through June 30th of 2013. Finally, the last page, or I should say bottom of page 7, the format for the accomplishment plans that you've developed wasn't a real good fit for our grants program here. The relationship to the current budget and the question on how habitat improvements will be sustained really is a question that we need to ask of the grant recipients. And so our intention would be to ask them to document answers to those questions in the information they provide in their proposal to us, and address those questions in that manner. So so I guess I'll leave it at that. I will point out that if possible, we'd like your consideration to possibly approve this accomplishment plan today. We think there's a lot of work to do to get this program up and running. If we're going to have an RFP prepared by late August, we really need to start work on this. Well, we've already got people working and spending a lot of time on this right now, and if we could have access to some funding right away on July 1st, I think it would help ensure that this program is ready to go, and we've got the money available as early in the fiscal year as we can.
Scott?
I have a couple questions for you, Mr. Shedd.
Sure.
You said that you would make an attempt, you know, to fund some small grants along with some large grants. I can tell you that it would, I don't know if break my heart would be exactly the right term, but all of a sudden we funded 10 $400,000 projects. In my estimation, that would virtually destroy what the thought process of the Conservation Partners Program is.
Mm-hmm.
Would you or could you, our initial proposals had a break in there where half the money would be submitted for projects from 0 to 125 and other projects from 125 to 400, and it was split 50-50 to ensure that there were dollars available for lots of little small grants. Is that something that you would consider implementing into your management of our small grants program?
You know, we could consider it. We're not sure what we're going to get for interest here, and whether that's realistic, whether or not we can spend half the dollars on those smaller grants or not, whether or not there's enough interest to do that or not. But if that's the wishes here, we can certainly consider.
And our method of addressing that was that, you know, a year later or 6 months later, you know, if one bucket was empty and one bucket was full, mm-hmm. you would then split those available funds 50-50 back again, mm-hmm. okay? So you wouldn't end up with one pot that just didn't get spent at all, okay, versus, you know, one pot that was completely empty, mm-hmm. you know? So I just think that from the hunting and fishing community, you know, that small grants program, I would much rather see you know, many $25,000, $50,000, and $100,000 projects funded, because I think that's where our buy-in from our hunting and fishing representation comes from. So that was one question I had. Then the second question is you said you were going to put together this technical assistance committee that had university individuals and agency individuals, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any way within our legal confines, I mean, when the Fish and Wildlife Foundation was interested, was being for the job, they certainly wanted the members of our Conservation Partners Small Grants Committee, our subcommittee, to play an advisory role as to what types of projects we would like to see. Could the Small Grants subcommittee be one of those members of your advisory? Now we can't fix. We cannot be involved in selecting projects.
Right.
But would you be open to allowing that Small Grants Committee to participate on an advisory role of what types of projects we would like to see, just as one of the many that you would use?
Sure. We were thinking of this technical advisory committee as being technical, as having people with expertise to kind of guide us on the technical merits of these proposals. So I'm not sure that's a great fit for say council members on that part. Certainly, if it's the wish here for the council to have some advisory role, we could look at building in that into the process here. I'd like to kind of separate the technical review of these proposals from other guidance or advice that we might get. And I'm not sure if your interest is on the technical side or if it's more on kind of some of the other aspects of how we select projects as far as distributing geographically, distributing between small and large, making sure that a lot of different organizations have access to these dollars, those kinds of things. So, I'd like to distinguish between the technical review versus other advice that you might provide to the council.
And I would be on the other side of that, not on the technical. I mean, which one has the greatest biological benefit, sure. This wetland restoration or that one?
And just on that point, I'm looking, Dave, on page 3, and it talks about the technical guidance committee, and then all of a sudden we have the selection criteria, but it doesn't say other than the commissioner will make the final decision. Who's going to advise the commissioner on what to decide? And I think that's what Scott's getting at is that Denise, you, another selection committee, how's that going to work?
You know, we've run a number of grants programs already in the department, and we have internal processes for staff to kind of review these things and make recommendations. So we haven't defined what that process would be. Certainly the commissioner is not going to be reviewing the individual merits of every project here. We're going to have staff reviewing this, kind of packaging it together, packaging up some recommendations that take into account the technical guidance committee's review, any other advice that we might get, and providing some recommendations on funding.
Okay. So Wayne, then Les, then Bob.
Mr. Dave, thanks first for volunteering to take on this job. I know you were extremely excited about it.
He tried to make that.
Yeah. I know that this is going to cut into a budget, which you didn't have in the first place. Is there a committee that already exists, or an oversight committee, or anything like that, that has the capability, the expertise to make you what you're already looking at?
There's really not. We do have one grants program that we administer right now. It's about a $500,000 program within the Division of Fish and Wildlife that awards grants for habitat work on wildlife management areas. And for that program, we put together some program staff and some managers from the division to review and make some decisions on that. But beyond that, we really don't have an existing entity. We do have some entities within the department that we could ask to take this on, but it's not a real good fit for any existing entity.
Les?
You had a reference to your DNR grant program staff.
Yeah.
The grant applicants are going to be located out of state, and to apply directly to a central location in St. Paul is going to be difficult. Are you going to allocate or delegate some of the responsibility out to your fish and wildlife people in the field as far as initially looking at the grants and working with the people? Because these guys really have got the knowledge of working with the local sportsman scouts and so forth, and I think it would be an aid to getting the word out and getting it down at the local level faster.
Yeah, our intent would be to ask our fish and wildlife, local fish and wildlife staff in the state to help out whenever asked if clubs or other organizations want to develop a project. We're going to make our staff available for that. We're a little concerned about the drain that puts on their time. I mean, they've got other priorities their plates are full already, but we want this program to be a success. We're going to track our costs in that manner and probably report back to you what it actually takes to run this program. But those costs, we wouldn't We wouldn't pay for those costs out of the administrative costs here. We would agree to do that, but we understand this is a priority, and we're going to ask our staff to work with these clubs to get these proposals pulled together. And we think, I mean, it's not easy to spend state money. There's a lot of hoops you need to jump through, and we're going to have to hold their hands and make sure they're aware of what all those hoops are and what they need to do to get through them.
Just one of the two in combination, we have another staff out there that's intimately familiar. That's the FWCD people, which I think work quite closely together with the old DNR people, so utilizing resources.
Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and Dave, thanks for doing this work. A couple of questions just on this point. You know, I think we all agree, and I know in Scott's committee we talked a lot about the importance of having technical assistance, so agency folks to review the proposals and so forth, and obviously, ideally having the approval of a local fisheries expert or whoever it is would be a requirement that I think would be ideal. And this is our first time doing this. This is not going to be the last time. And so I agree with your idea of tracking those costs because we don't want to fund a project without having the technical assistance. And we don't want to avoid technical assistance support on a cost basis if the president prevents us from doing the program at all. But Mr. Chair, a couple other thoughts here. Just to be mindful of, as these applications come in, you know, the council will be working on a parallel path for its own projects that we'll be supporting. And I think just as we are mindful of those projects that will come to the council that might better fit in your program, likewise the same, I think, with you in the other direction would be helpful. I didn't see in here anything about a public outreach effort, though I'm sure it's probably there's an invisible link in here, but something that you guys can do. But I obviously urge that you do a substantial amount. I know Joe Albert's here, for example, on the news, and I know Joe would probably get 10 or 20 more columns out of this because he's never on the front page of that newspaper. So it would be good to get that in there as well. And then, Mr. Chair, I just thought that, and you control the agenda, I don't, but it might be worthwhile as a standing report to the council for some period of time to have Dave or someone from DNR keep us informed about how this is going. This is obviously a very high-profile project and something that we're all very interested in. And I would love to hear next July and next August, before the 25th, you know, what does it look like as we get out? Because we all have contacts, we can help that. And then that might be in September or October when you've narrowed it down, given us a report of what you're thinking or, you know, the advice, the recommendations you'll be making to the commissioner before he makes his final decision.
No, you read my mind, Bob. I think that's an excellent idea that we do need to have, not only for the benefit of the council members, but we as council members are getting questions from the public. When does it start? How do I apply? So the extent we know where the program is, that's going to help us be able to answer those questions.
Sure.
Jim.
Yeah, Dave, I'd like to thank you also for the work on this program, which I think we all feel is the signature outreach part of this whole Heritage Council. And one of the things, you know, I've come across, I've talked to Dr. Roger Strand and Carol Henderson, that people all across the state, the MWA has done these wood duck box building days, the bluebird box building days. The groups that do this, you know, supplying these materials gets expensive, and I'm just asking the council and you, I guess, I hate to complicate your life, but would it be possible to take a small part of this matching grant program, say $20,000, $15,000, and just designate it for materials for those types of projects where we would just be supplying the materials for these, you know, public bluebird house building, wood duck house building days. So, you know, just something everybody could participate in and get our name out there and so on and so forth.
Dave?
That's the wishes of the council. We can sure do that. I'm not sure. Well, if you guys have a recommendation that way, we can certainly build that in with this.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a whole lot. I think the small grants thing, importance has been echoed, I think, up and down the line here, and as to how rural, I guess, small grant buy-in is really important to it, at least to this group, I think. And and I served with Scott as when he chaired the small grants committee. And hopefully we're looking at, if should the economy come back to reality, and looking at actually giving more dollars towards this program in the future. That's why we're not nailed down to one price. But Scott had mentioned about being part of that process. I know an ex officio type member, maybe you'd be open to something like that. Just an information channel, conduit, if you will, to the to the group. I think it'd be a great idea. And with the comment about Joe over there, I mean, you know, when he interviewed me years ago, he always got headlines, so I don't think that was quite fair. So.
Darby.
Yeah, Dave, I'm just wondering, would it be helpful at all to attempt to distinguish the difference between a small grant and a large grant? I mean, other than $400,000 and below is small, and above, it seems to me there might be some projects that were less than $400,000 that probably would be better off somewhere else. Any issue there?
You mean actually having two different categories?
Well, where you get, you would get some general advice. So would say, okay, if your project is sort of like this and this, then
see
your small grant.
Makes sense here. You know, I think this is something we're going to have to work through together. There, you know, there's certainly, you know, the council's dollars, you know, for big projects or programs that involve a lot of smaller projects. There's this Conservation Partners Grants Program, and then there are other ongoing grants programs, and these organizations out there that are interested in doing conservation work, all of a sudden are going to have a whole bunch of opportunities to fund their projects, and they're going to be shopping the projects around and kind of figuring out where the best place to go is, and I don't think we've got that all figured out yet. It's kind of a whole new world out there for how we fund conservation and how these partnerships go about securing funding for the work they're trying to do. And I don't have a good answer for you right now, I don't think. But I agree with Bob's earlier comment that we need to be talking together and kind of as we get a better idea of the kinds of work that folks need to do out there, I think it'll become clearer where we need to steer these funds. One thing that we are going to do with our I mentioned that grants program that currently exists that applies to wildlife management area work. Our intent would be to announce this Conservation Partners Grants Program and that Wildlife Management Area Grants Program at the same time, so that folks that are interested in doing work out there would know that there's two different opportunities. They know what the match requirements are and some of the guidelines and principles associated with each of those grants programs, and they could choose which program makes the most sense for them. And I think it would be a little less confusing for them also to know kind of in one shot where these grant opportunities are, rather than hearing about one opportunity in August and then a couple months later hearing about another grant opportunity that sounds kind of the same but is a little bit different. We'd like to make this as clear and transparent and kind of obvious to people as possible. So.
Scott?
I guess Mr. Shad would like us to approve his accomplishment plan today. I would like to make a motion that if we do that, we would get an agreement that we could get a split between the split that we used to have between the large grant and the small grant to ensure that we get some small grants funded.
Yeah, in fact, Scott, I think that and a whole number of other things have been raised that we'd like to see built into the work plan. And I think Bill has some suggestion to deal with that and some other things. Bill, do you want to just, and then I'll get to you, Wayne.
I have a suggestion on the split, and that is that any motion made include with it the addition of the following. On page 4, at the end of the first paragraph, which starts, every effort will be made, and at the end of that sentence, before the period, insert comma with an objective of granting 50% of the funds to projects above and below $125,000. And that would be an objective of a perfect 50-50 split.
Wayne?
Is that with a cap of $400,000?
Yeah.
We're not going to go to $500,000 or $600,000.
Right.
Do you want to just read that one more time? I'm sorry, Wayne. Bill, can you read that one more
comma? with an objective of granting 50% of the funds to projects above and below $125,000.
Wayne.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a little unfair. We, you know, DNR and Dave got dumped with a program that they weren't intending to do, and actually when the Small Grants Committee got together, we really never sat down with that definition of where we would like to see these funds go. Basically, we just said, you know, here, it's in Lechner, when somebody was talking about bluebird houses or whatever. We never really said what we, how we'd like to see this money expended. Would it be beneficial to you if the Small Grants Committee were to get back together and recommend so that we could give you like a definition for the programs and defining characteristics of what a small grants project would be? Or is it, are you happy just to go out on your own and wing it?
Well, you know, we've got the criteria in the statute. We've got the guidance from your strategic. I mean, we've got quite a bit already. If there's more there, that could bring some clarity to that. That would be.
Well, that's what I was basically talking about. We're talking about the clarity, like the half of it going one way, half the other way. All we really need to provide you is with basically a consensus from the group about what we're looking for.
Yeah.
I think that the language that Bill has recommended would satisfy my concern.
I guess council members, Dave is asking for some approval at some level of this work plan just so they can get going. Are you comfortable with what's here? I mean, the options are we can just approve it with the change that Bill suggested or not. We can approve it provisionally. I think it's been stated that we'd like to have a standing update on the program. And a number of suggestions have been made today about, you know, things that you should at least consider, and while where appropriate, incorporate in your work plan. And one thing we could do is approve this provisionally, then subject to a final approval at the next meeting that at least takes into consideration a lot of the items and ideas that were raised today. So I guess I look to council members some advice on how you would like to proceed. Wayne?
You know, I think with the change that Bill had mentioned is probably adequate. These guys aren't going to go out and start putting in wildflowers in people's gardens. I mean, this stuff is... You guys are on the ground. You have on ground personnel.
I have a lot of
trust that they're going to do it.
Okay, Jim.
Well, I just wonder. Will we have enough time just to talk this over these next 2 days and maybe come up with a decision tomorrow before we break up?
We don't have a business meeting tomorrow, and so we won't be able to make a decision tomorrow. This is our business.
Sure.
Yeah, Bob.
But if we. Except the notion of having, and this is one of the standing reports, we have a next meeting in July, we have another meeting in August, both in advance of when the program goes on the street and solicits, so there'll be at least two opportunities for refinement to be made based on subsequent reporting and so forth. I was a little reticent at the beginning when I had not seen anything and it's on the agenda, but I'm supportive of this. Approved with the notion that we will have continued reporting and opportunity for refinement or
something. Okay. Bill.
I would suggest that any motion also include the addition of those reports as milestones on page 7.
Scott, you were the one that had the motion on the floor to adopt this report. Are those friendly amendments?
Yes.
Okay. So, Bill, do you want to just recast again what we are going to be... we have a motion on the floor, and Bill, can you state what that motion is?
It is. The motion is to approve the accomplishment plan for the Lessard-Sams Conservation Partners Grants Program with the following amendments. On page 4, paragraph 1, after the word level and before the period, insert comma with an objective of granting 50% of the funds to projects above and below $125,000. And on page 7, in the milestones area, add reports to the council July, August, September, and quarterly thereafter.
Okay. The motion on the floor, as stated. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Okay. We have three items of business left, but I know there are a couple people who came here to provide some public comment, and we had told them that public comment would be at 2:30, and we are now about an hour beyond that. And I guess at this point, I would ask, we have James Stratton. Is Jim Stratton in the room?
He is not in the room.
Okay, and Gloria Stevenson? I guess now would be we'll have any time at the end for public comment, but I know you've been here since the beginning, and we advertise this as a 2:30 public comment period. So if you'd like to speak to the council for a couple minutes at this point, I'd welcome you to the table.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you very much. My name is Gloria Stevenson. I work for Todd County. One of my commissioners, county commissioners, asked me to come today and talk to you briefly about a park that we're working project at a park that we're working on. The name of the park is Battle Point. It is the only county park in Todd County. And it was suffering from really bad shoreline erosion. And basically the park was undeveloped. It was a boat ramp and a point where people would go out and shoot ducks in the fall. The county's been working on enhancing and expanding the site to be able to use it for other uses and to restore the shoreline. What we're trying to do is do an excellent job with this park so that it will serve as a model for the county as they expand their park or their public land program in the future. Some of the things that we're trying to do fall into the components of habitat, clean water, and parks and trails. So it kind of falls into lots of different divisions of where this money is going to help counties and public projects. One of the things that we're working on right now is shoreline erosion control and habitat restoration. We have this summer restored shoreline using various methods for improving the shoreline to about 1,100 feet of the park. And there's about another 1,000 feet that we'll need to find funding to do next year. Basically, the park woods has so much wave action, and it was sand, and through the years, people had cut away all of the trees along the shoreline, and we were losing a foot, sometimes even 3 feet of shore or of soil in a year. So we needed to do something pretty immediate or the park was going to go away. We have managed to raise money to develop a master plan for the park. We raised enough money to pay for this restoration along. It's a 25-foot buffer around the shoreline. For 1,100 feet of the project so far. A lot of that came from local contributions, volunteers. We've literally had hundreds of people out there working. There are 11,000 live plants being planted, and they're mostly being done by volunteers. We applied for a fishing pier grant, which we were told on the DNR staff that we were at the top of the list for, I think, 4 years now, but that has not been funded. So we have the walkway going to the fishing pier, and the fishing pier is the
pier. But,
here, nowhere.
Yeah. What we want to do for the future, I mean, we really want this to be a model for the rest of the county so that people can see that public lands can be managed properly and fishing habitat. I mean, fish started coming back right away after we started working on that shoreline. It was really kind of fun to see. But we want to get the fishing pier in. We want to create some walking paths. There's a lot of interest in birding at the park. It's wooded. We want to do a forest management plan. We want to do a good job with this park, but obviously we'll need funding to do all of those things. We kind of fall into, you know, as I was looking at how you divided all of the money, I don't really know where we fit. Maybe we fit with that conservation program that you were talking about, partnership program. But, you know, the pieces that we are trying to do for this park probably total under $350,000. We want to put in educational signing and a place where we can bring students from schools so they can learn from this project, and hopefully they'll do better things for the rest of the county in the future. So,
thank you.
That's basically what I came to do, is to tell you about this project, and hopefully there's going to be a program where we will fit so that we can apply for funds and help our county.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time to attend the meeting. Is there any other? Oh, Gary? Yes, please. Yes, please. And if you could just identify yourself.
Well, my name is Dr. Greg Hope. I'm a board member of the Minnesota Prairie Chicken Society. Thank you. Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas, Bird Conservation Minnesota, and this year I'm the president-elect of the Minnesota chapter of the Wildlife Society. In addition, I manage several heritage enhancement grants for the DNR, a couple LCCMR grants, a couple NOFA grants, and a couple other federal grants through my work with the Detroit Lakes Wildland Management District. What I would like to do is just generally address some of the importance that specifically the Prairie Chicken Society and the Wildlife Society sees with prairies and prairie wetlands. And as part of Minnesota, it's hard to tease those two apart. Let me just give you some numbers here. The Minnesota Legislative Sportsman Caucus states that $3.4 billion are spent in this state by hunters and fishermen, and we support about 55,000 jobs. Bird Watchers, Minnesota Ornithological Union, estimates kicks in another $500 million to the state. But I'd like to say that the importance of prairies to myself and my friends, it's more than just hunting licenses and shotgun cells and binoculars, as the case may be. We also like to think that in addition to all the recreational and enjoyment, that our prairies and prairie wetlands provide a number of ecosystem services for us. Let me just show you some handouts I have here. Western Minnesota, the Red River Valley specifically, we all know about the floods this spring. However, if you look at the FEMA map for presidential disaster declarations, Clay County and the other counties of the Red River have actually had disaster declarations 8 of the last 8 years. We do have a fair flooding problem around there. We also have a number of wetlands. This is a map of Clay County generated by Ducks Unlimited and the Fish and Wildlife Service. These are drained and restorable wetlands in Clay County. And this is obviously the eastern half of the county, which is actually the dry half. What I calculated is that in western or eastern Clay County, we have over 20,000 acres of drained and restorable wetlands. That's about 32 square miles. If you take and extrapolate that to the entire Red River Valley, 360 square miles of drained and restorable wetlands. If you think about holding, containing 360 square miles of spring runoff or heavy rains, we would have had some high water in the Red River this spring. We probably wouldn't have had a flood. And we surely wouldn't have had the cost and financial upheavals and disruptions to people's lives if we had those wetlands. We tend to, all the work is levees and shunting water back and forth. The key is keeping the water out of the rivers during those peak times. And the way you do that is you store the water in wetlands. And then all the duckies have little places to swim around in the summers, et cetera, et cetera. Now, wetlands are great, but from a wildlife perspective, you really need prairie wetlands. The term is prairie pothole, not pothole prairie, and not pothole. Just digging a hole in the ground, letting it fill up with water, that might help with flood reduction. It won't do much for wildlife habitat. For wildlife habitat, we need these wetlands, but we also needed them surrounded with extensive grasslands. These grasslands also provide a number of other benefits. One of the benefits is carbon sequestration. You look at that big blue stem, and it can be shoulder high or head high. You're only seeing 10% of the prairie. 90% of the prairie is below ground, and they are, with photosynthesis, converts carbon dioxide in the air into sugar, and that is then shunted below ground. Dave Tillman's research group at the University of Minnesota has shown that each acre of restored prairie pulls 9.9 tons of carbon dioxide out of the air every year. Okay, that's a lot. In a recent Audubon Magazine article titled Pots of Gold, talked about that, the flood storage and the carbon sequestration that prairies can do. Prairies can do lots of good for the world, especially this part. Some research at the prairie out in Jamestown, North Dakota, showed that if we could restore the prairie pothole region of North Dakota, it would be the equivalent in sucking up carbon dioxide of removing 4 million cars from Americans' roads. Prairies also have a number of impacts on Minnesota, specifically Minnesota's agriculture. Honeybees alone contribute $14.1 billion to the nation's economy. Unfortunately, there aren't any numbers specifically on Minnesota pollinators and Minnesota agriculture. We've all probably heard about colony collapse disorder and other diseases in honeybees. Honeybee populations are collapsing all over the country. What this means is we're going to have to start relying on native pollinators, native bees, other native insects, to fill in this $14.1 billion in our agricultural economy. The way you maintain native pollinators on the landscape is through grasslands, wildlife, wildflowers, etc. So a model such as typical is out here with the wetland management areas or the wildlife management areas and the waterfowl production areas, this kind of postage stamp, 80 acres here, 100 acres here, scattered through an agricultural landscape, will provide a buffer for agricultural producers with this. You may have heard, I thought we were going to be in Fergus Falls tomorrow. Fergus Falls Daily Journal a couple years ago, has an article, crop pollination is threatened in some areas which could lead to crop failures. The Minnesota Supreme Court has made the unprecedented move back in 2006. They saw that honeybees were so important to Minnesota's economy, they gave honeybees rights. Honeybees and honeybee keepers now have rights in the state of Minnesota. That's how important they are. Okay. In addition to this, insects, beneficial insects, predatory insects, can live in these. Research in Britain has shown that these beneficial insects can move 70 to 100 yards out into agricultural fields, soybeans, wheat, and corn. What this means is they can completely eliminate pest insects in these areas. So again, this patchwork quilt of grasslands, these beneficial insects move out, saves insecticide costs, boosts yield, puts money into producers' pockets. Okay. Now, I've given you a bunch of numbers, preferably most of them with dollar signs. What I'd also like to make an argument for is there's an aesthetic and a quality of life for those of us who live in western Minnesota that go along with these prairies. Let me just read a couple of quotes to you out of sort of kind of the literature of both early Minnesota and the early Midwest. Imagine a day gone by when you're walking home from school, a quote here from the late 1800s, or about the late 1800s, a daily event throughout the hunting season parties of hunters returning from the field with all the space available in their double buggies or light wagons packed with prairie chickens. They used to talk about entire train cars packed with prairie chickens, millions and millions of prairie chickens harvested off of Minnesota's prairies. I think it's also just kind of, again, to kind of do some hand-waving and some general comments about the prairie. The prairie and all of its expressions is a massive, subtle place with a long history of contradictions and misunderstandings. But it is worth the effort of comprehension. It is the center of our national identity. And for those of you who have never had the opportunity, please take the opportunity to go stand in a field of big blue stem where the grass is 8 feet tall and you have to look up at the seed heads. Every American has the right, as part of their cultural heritage, to stand and grasp as high as their head in order to feel some small measure of history coursing through his veins and personally establish an aesthetic bond with the past. Let me tell you that prairie restoration can work. In Clay County alone, in the early 1980s, before the CRP and WRP and all those programs, we had less than 200 prairie chickens in the county. Last year, with CRP and all these other programs, we basically enrolled 9% of Clay County into these agricultural programs. We now have over 1,400 prairie chickens in the county. So a 9% increase in habit gives us a 650% increase in our prairie chicken populations. So it just takes a little bit to a little bang or a little bucks gives you a really big bang when it comes to prairies. And then I end with a quote from Sam County Almanac by Alva Leopold. There are some who can live without wild things and some who cannot. Those of us who have children or grandchildren, do we really want them to grow up in a state without pheasants and prairie chickens and ducks and everything else? And like I said, those are just some general big picture issues with why a lot of the organizations I represent think that Minnesota grasslands and Minnesota prairies are important.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
And also, sorry, I brought gifts.
You cannot bring gifts, unfortunately. We can't accept gifts as public officials, no.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Thank you for the generosity anyway.
We brought the Prairie Chicken of Minnesota, with a project funded by the DNR through the Minnesota Prairie Chicken Society.
Great.
And they're here, but I guess I'm sorry.
Thanks for the gesture, but we can't accept gifts.
Okay.
Yeah, very good. I'd say give them to Bill Becker, and he can, if you so choose, and he can.
We can put it on the internet.
Yeah, we can put it on the internet. We can at least look at it.
Yeah, it's, parts of it are already on the internet.
Yeah. So, can I ask Greg some questions?
Absolutely.
Greg, do you live in this area?
I'm up in Holly, up in Clay County.
Do you know how do public officials think about public land in this area?
Public officials, county commissioners, DNR, Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah.
I think in Clay County, a couple of our county commissioners are fairly good advocates of it. I know John Evert, who's our head of our current county commission, is a big fan of prairies, prairie wildlife, and Clay County has a number of waterfowl production areas and wildlife management areas, in addition to a fair amount of nature conservancy properties.
And in your experience of all the different methods we could use to do the things you want to do here, I mean, what kind of you prefer? Do you prefer WMAs or?
I think a shotgun approach, whatever works, whether it's direct purchase by feds, direct purchase by state, easements, hunting, no hunting. I guess my goal would be is to be flexible. Whatever we can do to preserve what's left of our native prairie. You guys probably know that there's less than 0.1% of Minnesota's native prairie. Whatever we can do to protect that, I say do it.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Greg, are you going to be in Fergus tomorrow?
I am not.
No. Dr. Rex Johnson will be presenting tomorrow.
Yes.
With some and local projects.
I was trying not to step too much on his. I didn't talk to Rex. So I was trying to not
this
to step on his.
This conversation has taken place 100 times in the last 3 months, and it's moving fast. And the whole corridor, from all the way from Traverse County to Kitson County, needs to be addressed in the Red River Valley. And I think this is just many, many pieces that will eventually fit in. Let's stay into it.
So, Greg, I was informed by our quasi-legal counsel that if it's an informational gift, which it sounds like it's an informational video.
It's informational, funded by the DNR.
Okay, then I think it is allowable.
Okay.
So you'd like
it's a 20-minute video. It just kind of gives the history of the prairie chicken in Minnesota.
Great. Yes,
Just Wayne? One comment, because Jim was asking
Go
about...
Go ahead. Okay.
Jim was asking about how the officials, public officials would think about this. I can guarantee you that in the last 2 years of flooding that's gone on, what generally was not acceptable as far as restoration is now very acceptable. The people up in Norman County have basically stepped forward saying we want somebody to do something. So I think you'll find support there.
Great. Again, Greg, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Are there any other public comments at this time?
I'm just through that area. They're solving it. They got backhoes and excavators up there, and they're cleaning those ditches out again. I think that's wonderful.
Okay. Gary?
I was going to say,
Fine, go ahead. Now's the time. So I know you've been here before the council, just mindful that a couple minutes would be better.
It shouldn't be that long. It should be that long. Although, I don't know, that seems like undue influence by a particular game species. The others don't have an opportunity to provide something. I just had two general concepts regarding long-range planning and some of the other elements that have been in discussion by a number of the supporting groups. I just wanted to go back just briefly a little bit over the history of the amendment. After the constitutional right to hunt and fish passed in 98, essentially the longest group supporting the 1/8 or 33% for fish, game, and wildlife was Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. They also supported over that time specifically a citizen-led council over game and fish over this segment. Of course, added on over that period was there was a duck rally coalition. They supported a little bit different version of dedicated funding. The campaign for conservation had a little different version of dedicated funding than the other two groups. And then lastly, Senator Cohen, as Senator Satchuk knows, Senator Cohen's coalition had another version of dedicated funding. So there was really four groups. MOHA recently had, and I've just kind of given an overview of what they did, a meeting about a week ago where they discussed a lot of this long-range planning. Their view is that there is a proven long-term system that's been in place for long-range planning that they've used, their member groups use, and feel would be extraordinarily comfortable. It's been successful in the past, and that is utilizing the DNR as a facilitator, and then bring in the citizen members, or if some are still around. I think in sequence, the forest plan is the most recent, then probably the duck recovery plan, the pheasant plan, and then the WMA plan is probably the oldest. It's a 50-year plan. It needs some updating. There might be some things pertaining to the metro area that might be useful in that. And I think the basic rule that made sense to them, business principle there, is use data and information and people at the source. I think that if you get some of the WMA people to provide what they thought when they were doing what they were doing, or the duck plant people, some of those citizens, I think they could provide some firsthand input into what they were trying to garner. And there's going to be some clashes here between these different species groups, you know, across the board. That's pretty much what I've got on the that piece of it. But I would invoke the council to bring the DNR, actually bring them in and say, look, we would like to get some of your data. We would like some of your facilitating capabilities. I mean, there's widespread agreement. They're very good at holding meetings and doing all of that kind of stuff like that. So the other issue that comes up repeatedly, it came up, is on the mission statement. We're just wondering if it's possible to include the second piece of the Outdoor Heritage Fund mission, which is basically the spirit of this amendment. Senator Saxhog, I think, might agree that what was a high priority of your project in northern Minnesota, public access and opportunity hunting, fishing, berry picking, and so on. We think that a lot of the groups, I know it's affected U.S. National policy now. There's been a change because a couple senators spotted that some misuse of funds on federal priorities, and they made federal policy changes. There's also the CRP program, hunter access and varying access programs. Just that consideration of that the second piece, which is the longest piece in the constitutional amendment that remained pretty much the same for almost a decade. A couple of changes here and there, but when the language you now have actually originated, I believe, and maybe Rick can verify that, but the language in there actually came from, was last carried by Dallas Sams. So it's about 3-4 years old. It hasn't changed in the least. So with that, that's
great. Thank you. Any comments? Okay. Great. Thanks, Gary. Let's move on now then. Yes, sir. Please, if you'd like to address the council, please introduce yourself.
John Lundquist. I'm president of the Christina Ina Anka Lake Association.
Welcome.
Thank you. And we were the recipients of a nice chunk of money from the council, and I want to thank everyone. And our association is, we're represented by over 50% of the counties in Minnesota, so it's going to help a lot of people. And I encourage whatever we can do with our shallow lakes and our grasslands. Like this gentleman over here said, they're in tough shape, and we need your help. And I'm sure you guys will keep on paying attention to this area.
Thank you.
That's all I have to say.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, and thanks for attending the meeting.
Point of interest, Mr. Lindquist, if you could just tell us how, on this Christina project, how long has this been going on? How long have you been trying to restore that?
I believe we started in 1999.
Okay.
And we've got good grassroots support. We donate a lot of money ourselves, you know, through fundraising and personal donations. And it's been going good, and like I say, you guys had open ears, and thank you very much.
Great. All right. Let's move on now to, we have two agenda items left, and that is we need to approve a strategy that will guide our deliberations and process for developing our fiscal year 2011 recommendations, and then we're going to adopt a summer schedule for meetings and field sessions. So with that, Bill, I will turn over to you the material that is in the packet regarding our process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to sequentially go over two documents. One is the Executive Committee report. The second is an alternative version. You can tell the difference between them because the alternative version has alternative version written on the top. And I want to make just an overarching comment about both of these strategies and processes. And I want to make it clear that all steps are under the control and authority of the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. And this will be implemented by using what in process improvement language is known as a gatekeeper, in that after every step, one of the gatekeepers I'll list in a minute will be required to provide approval before going on to the next step. And depending on what the wish of the council is, the gatekeepers that we will use are the council itself, the executive committee, the chair, or the executive director with consultation with the chair. So we're not going anywhere from one step to the next without agreement that the last step was done right. That being said, at the highest levels, both of these documents are essentially bring us to the same place. At the executive committee, I introduced the concept of equifinality, that there's more than one route to the end, but you always get to the same end. And I think that this is true with these. They are organized as follows, and the organization is parallel, although some of the terms are slightly different. We discuss the background. We discuss, and I'm going through the committee report, page 2 of 10, the existing plan review and incorporation. Then on page 5 of 10, planning and recommendation process overview. And then on page 8 of 10, call for requests and forming council recommendations. And on page 10 of 10, definitions. And I think the fastest, easiest, and best way to go over these two is to start with the executive committee report on page 6 of 10 and say, in preface to this discussion, that both of these approaches attempt to use existing plans and community knowledge. We have, if we were to adopt this today, approximately 90 days to get this task done to the end of the strategic plan, which feeds into the recommendation. So there's no way this can be done with original work. You have to rely on existing work. And the first thing that we have done is divide the state up into sections. This is a vastly improved map over the one that the executive committee looked at. You can actually see all the sections. We have a northwest section. We have a metropolitan section, a moraine parklands section, a prairie region, and the Paleozoic Plateau. The northwest region is actually known to, as the Superior Uplands, Peat, Lake, and Plains. Those are also shown with their more common names on page 5 of 10 at the bottom of the area of the description of the regions. Then on page 7 of 10 is what's known as a cross-functional flowchart. And the beginning of the flowchart is with the help of consultants and whatnot to extract and prioritize items from the Minnesota Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan for each section and to accumulate 50-year vision objectives by each section. This is on the committee report. That's the result of that, and this is not a creative activity, I don't think. It's more of a clerical activity. The results of that would go to conservation professionals who would review them, eliminate overlap, and validate the information from the plans, and break the goals, the 50-year goals, into 5-year objectives and targets, annual targets for 2011 by section. The reason for the 5-year breakout is that we need to reevaluate this plan after 5 years, so it would be nice when we do our evaluation to know what target we were headed for. The results of that are then taken to public meetings in each section to get input on implementation and priorities, which comes back formally to the council and is incorporated by the council, adjusted and then incorporated by the council into the call for requests. This is at the end of September, basically. During October, governments, NGOs, and individuals prepare and submit the call for requests, and then that comes back to the council in early November, and a criteria-based ranking is done by each Lesard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council member and averaged across the council. And then based on that and discussion amongst members, the council selects requests for hearings. They have hearings and then recommended markup. Incidentally, as part of the recommended markup, we would do the mock allocation, but it was agreed that that would be done publicly. So that, in essence, takes us through the committee report. The alternative version varies ever so slightly, and I would refer you to the flowchart in the alternative version, which is on page 6. And there, the beginning is the same. We adopt the sections and then with fusing conservation professionals and staff and facilitators at the discretion of Heritage Council staff, we would develop the habitat goals and Outdoor Heritage Fund funded actions for each section. And we would use the statewide resource species and other plans consistent with the OHF mission. And that includes the statewide comprehensive our statewide conservation and preservation plan funded by LCCMR, as well as any other plan that assists us in doing that and that the conservation professionals can come to some consensus on. They would at the same time do the review, eliminate overlap, and validate information from plans, break the habitat goals into 5-year objectives and targets. Then we hold public meetings in each section, and then we have the call for requests, and the process is the same throughout. So So it's in the very beginning that there are slight differences, and I'm not so sure that the difference is not more in nomenclature than in actual process. Is that sufficient, Mr.
Chair? Yeah, and let me comment, because I'm the one who authored this alternative version, and let me explain the intent. The intent was not to change the process one bit. As I was sitting in a hotel room in Duluth and working with Bill on the revised change from the executive committee, you know, the clientele that is going to use this is not just the 12 members of the council, but also the public, the conservation partners who are going to be applying for funds. And I recall how useful that document we prepared and adopted last January was. People knew what we were going to do, when we were going to do it, and what the outcomes were. As I read the document, I got confused myself. And I thought, you know, it's easy to, I get confused very easily, but I suspect others would. And so my intent of this alternative version was not to rewrite what the executive committee said. It was just trying to put different language together to say the same thing, maybe in a clear way. And maybe it wasn't clear, but as I was going through it, I got on a roll and I just started changing. I thought, well, I'm just going to create an alternative version that I'm not saying the council needs to do anything with it, but for me, it helped me clarify in my own mind the process that I envisioned this council going through to get us to that final point in January 15th of 2010 of having some recommendations to the legislature on fiscal year 2011 appropriations. But to get there, it didn't change. The intent was never to change the process. It was simply to help clarify what that process was. So with that, we have the executive committee report that Bill referred to, and this was members who were not there. This was worked over, and modifications were made to this original document that staff prepared by the executive committee. We need to discuss and ultimately adopt and approve a process that starts moving our work forward. So with that, I guess I would open up to discussion, hopefully leading towards a recommendation and adoption by this council of a process. Bill?
I would just move approval of the executive committee document.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve the executive committee document and discussion. Bill?
Yes. On the executive committee document, you have Campaign for Conservation. Now, that was talked about a little bit when I was at the committee meeting, and in this particular version, you have a 50-year vision, and I don't think we're charged with a 50-year vision here. I think the statute says we have to have a 25-year plan. Can somebody maybe explain that a little bit better to me, why we're looking at 50 years down the line when we know things change that quickly, and 50 years is a little...
Bob? I think, Senator, the 50-year vision was Campaign for Conservation's title document. It was the title of the document. But you're right, we have a 25-year plan. That's how long the amendment lasts. Mm-hmm.
So to be clear, this is not going to be a 50-year mission. We're talking about that.
No, we have a parallel strategy. One is to develop this 25-year strategic plan, which some version of this should get us towards, a long ways towards, as well as a shorter-term need to develop recommendations for appropriations in fiscal 11.
Sure.
Yep. Wayne.
Mr. Chair, I reviewed both of those documents, the plan that was provided by the executive committee and the alternative, and right now we have a motion to adopt the executive one. I'm wondering, what's the process here? Because I personally prefer the alternative, and... are we going to mix the two together here, possibly, or since we have a motion to accept the executive session one, are we looking for amendments to that document? Or do I have a choice here?
We have a motion on the floor to adopt this, but we are discussing that, which can include amendments. I just want to make it clear that the intent was never to create a competing document. It was just to try to clarify the document that's before you. And so just make sure people understand, as you read it, if you see things that are different in terms of process, that was not the intent, and we need to correct that. The process should be the same. It was just one of clarity.
Mr. Chair, that's what I'm saying, is that when I looked at the two, I preferred the alternative one because it was clear to me.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Bob. I would just, you know, from a process standpoint, I think we all should place a value and respect the process, and the process included review by the executive committee, approval by them, forwarding to the full council for consideration. And I think that's an important thing, and I think we should place a value on that. But I think we also ought not to allow the process to get in the way of what we hope to be the best outcome. So I think we have to think about these documents as to what the ultimate highest value is, what will give us the best outcome. An outcome I would describe as one that is a document that is well understood by the public at large and is meaningful to them and allows them to understand what the council is up to and how they can participate in a meaningful way to ultimately result in, you know, constitutional mission that is really achieved. So I think it's important.
Other comments? Jim?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I would just like to comment on the executive, the original version, where we've asked the Campaign for Conservation, this is a private group, to accumulate our objectives for these different regions. Now, Bill just stated it's more of a clerical job. I disagree with that. Because as we've talked earlier, the plans we originally looked through when we were developing our process were, for the most part, developed by the Department of Natural Resources. They're public plans. And somebody is going to have to go through those plans and take the redundancy out of them. Because we don't need the requirements of all these plans. Someone's going to have to sort through them. Now, the Campaign for Conservation has no history in grassroots conservation in the state whatsoever. And that's problematic for me. I think it's a job that should be done, as it is in the alternative version, by professionals and neutral parties. And so I could not support this first plan. I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you taking the time and reworking it. It's much easier for me to digest and just feel much better about it, making sure that it's all done in a public forum by basically public entities to help us move through this process. So I could not support the original version.
Darby?
Yeah, let me just make a few comments. I think part of the problem, I may be wrong, but I think part of the problem is lack of familiarity including lack of understanding of exactly what the Campaign for Conservation has done, what they have created, and how it can be useful to us. And I'm hoping that people don't view it as somehow going to impose on us some sort of collection of recommendations or whatever. I mean, what they've done, and I think you'll see it in the council, the executive committee rather, work that basically spends a whole page describing sort of who they are, what they've done, what they have, how it comes together. And the guts of that is they've taken something that the DNR has not done. They've taken all those plans and they've synthesized them. They've put them together. They're not making judgment calls. They're simply putting a set of plans into the form that they can be extremely useful to us. Those folks went into the regions. They went out into the state. They had teams of conservation experts, I presume the same ones that another entity would use to review those findings, and they ultimately produced that synthesis. It's clearly solid science. I mean, if you look at what they've done and how they arrived at what they arrived at, there was very strong citizen input across the state. It's clearly an excellent tool for us to use at no cost. I think given what we're being sort of asked to do here is something that to do it, you really have to have the data that the Campaign for Conservation folks put together. if DNR has to do that, I don't know how they do it other than going to that data set, that synthesis, that statewide synthesis. Otherwise, I don't know when it gets done, if it's going to be a serious, workable process. I think there are a number of really compelling reasons for us to use that design as present in the executive committee's work. I'm curious as to, you know, what specifically are the objections? What are the major problems that, and I guess, Jim, Jim talked about some of that.
Yeah, Darby. Well, I mean, we've asked them to do a specific job here, and that is to put these goals together. And after talking to David at the executive meeting, they have not synthesized these numbers. They just have the raw numbers. They have not put them together, Darby. So they're starting from ground zero, just like the DNR would be. They have the raw numbers from every plan, but they have not boiled them down. So now we're asking a private group. I mean, I don't care if you took Ducks Unlimited, PF, whoever. You can't have a private group making these goal determinations for us. You've got to have a public agency. And why not use the agency that developed all these plans? Why open ourselves up to criticism and being suspect by bringing in a private entity to do this?
Okay.
Darby?
Well, I guess maybe either I have been misled or have been seriously misreading the outcomes, because my understanding is clearly that they did indeed go one step beyond just looking at individual plans, that they then synthesized a statewide entity, and that it is very, very easy for them to essentially shift. I mean, we got a different configuration of ecoregions or eco-planning areas or however we want to title it. That it just seems to me that in fact they really do have something to offer for us. And if I'm wrong, I guess I'd ask David Hartwell to fill me in, because then I've been pretty.
So Dave, on that point, we have a number of people who want to talk, but could you respond to that? Because there is some confusion about what actually has been done.
The issue that is going to be facing whomever does this in whatever synthesis is done is that nobody in developing the plans has used the same language. You have grasslands, you have wetlands, you have prairies, and everybody looks at that differently and includes different pieces. The wetland, the duck plan per se, includes grasslands and prairies and wetlands. And the pheasant plan includes grasslands and prairies and some wetlands, but not as many. But they define it differently. So it doesn't matter what data set you go to, there's overlap that's never going to be resolved unless you start from scratch. My understanding of what we approved at the executive committee was the Campaign for Conservation would provide a starting point, which would then go to the professionals and say, okay, you guys are the ones with your feet in the dirt as such. Do your best shot at pulling this apart and coming up with a specific target for this area that makes sense. Because I got to tell you, it doesn't matter whether it's the DNR trying to do it, Campaign for Conservation, or NASA. I mean, it makes no difference. That data that exists today is not going to yield clean stuff. And it isn't going to happen in 90 days, no matter who you do it with. We spent a year and a half trying to get there, and we couldn't get there. I think this has a whole lot more to do with the Campaign for Conservation's decision not to go after the approval of the Heritage Council, but instead to approve the constitutional amendment and avoid being involved in the debate about the Heritage Council than it does about whether or not we're giving the data or not giving the data. And people have sour grapes that we didn't take a position on that, and I'm sorry. But we provided the best information in the zones that we could based on the existing plans. And that data is available for use at no charge. If people don't want it and want to spend money or ask other people to do that work again, go ahead and do it. But you won't have my vote for it because it's just sour grapes. I'm sorry.
Scott.
Well, I got really two questions, statements maybe. You know, when whatever program we put forward, we have to get buy-in from all the people in Minnesota as to how we did what we did and why we did what we did. And so I take a look at that, and Darby made the statement that, you know, it's maybe a lack of information, call it what you want. When people take a look at our process, and all of a sudden, right at the beginning of that process, there's a name there that nobody recognizes. At least none of the hook and bullet people that I talk to know who they are. And so I've always said that I want our decisions as biologically based from wildlife science as possible. My contention is that you could take the area wildlife managers, the area fisheries managers, the AMA plan, the duck plan, and the pheasant plan, and those people from southwest Minnesota could get together, and in probably an afternoon they could come up with what the common goals amongst their plans are. And to me, that's the most fundamentally biologically based outcome that you can get. And I think it's an outcome that the citizens of Minnesota would understand and could then buy into. And so I don't know who the Campaign for Conservation is. I look at this flow chart and I say, this is what I think people will understand. The alternative version is what I think people will understand and what the conservation community will buy into. And so I would I lean towards the alternative version.
Let me just Joe Santrum thinks that the stuff that we did in the executive committee is the right stuff, and he responded to me today in an email saying the editorial in the St. Paul paper saying go for this that appeared this morning was a good thing. And Ducks Unlimited just sort of is one of the major players in the work that we're doing.
Bill? Did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I thought there was others down there before.
There are.
But I just wanted just to comment on a couple of the comments by Darby, that reinventing the process. Well, we have conservation professionals, which I call the DNR, that have been dealing with duck habitat, fish habitat, wildlife habitat from the state of Minnesota for years, have all kinds of plans and all kinds of science out there, and I just don't know why we wouldn't utilize those science-based projects. And I think we kind of, we talked about that when we first started out, that we were going to use that. I'm not saying the Campaign for Conservation doesn't have that, but the idea that they're not going to want to make judgment calls either is a little concerning to me. I guess I want somebody to make judgment calls, and that's the stuff you're going to get from the DNR, it seems to me. And I would think that's going to be science based, and so I too am for the alternative version versus the other one.
Wayne,
Mr. Chair, I just want to let you know that prior to a couple weeks ago, I really didn't understand how the Campaign for Conservation got involved either. But what I did do is when I first saw the document, it said fine, and then when I read the alternative. The only thing that struck me was it made total sense to me, and that's the one reason why I liked that better. It's not because I had sour grapes towards the other one or anything else. And so therefore, since I really don't have a major opinion against one, it's just that I prefer one, I would like to amend your motion to adopt the language of the alternative version.
So I'm not clear what that motion is. Wayne.
Well, it's like I can't make a motion to say it, to just do this one, so it's like we want to adopt this process or this planning strategy, but I prefer the language in this one.
So we have a motion on the floor to adopt this report. Are you making an amendment to the motion to adopt?
Delete all.
A delete all amendment and insert in here the alternative version into the executive committee report.
Correct.
Okay. We have an amendment to the motion. Any discussion on this motion?
I think we've been
discussing. Is there any further discussion on this amendment to the motion? Okay, we've got Les and then Darby.
Yeah, I would.
Les and then Les.
I'm sorry.
Les and then Darby.
I'm not sure if I'm discussing the amendment.
I want to discuss the amendment to the motion.
You know, I've read through the brief on the 50-year vision, and it's a great vision. There's a lot of good work that's been done, but I think it's taking a little bit of a blue-sky approach as far as controlling development and ag policy, which would be great, maybe buying up a lot of land for preservation. But I have problems with that particular independent group working as the preface to the conservation professionals, and if they were part of it, not to destroy the good work of the 50-year vision, but put it as part of the process and incorporate it as part of that professional group that's working with it. But I spent a lot of time talking with the different stakeholders groups, and the stakeholders groups do not feel comfortable with the executive council's recommendations. They do feel comfortable by bringing the professional conservationists in the start of the program and making that decision at the start of the program. I think we're taking, just to summarize, I think the alternative vision version makes some good, solid sense not to ignore the 50-year vision, but to incorporate it integrally into that next step, combining those two columns.
Darby.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. First off, if we're going to move this amendment, I would hope that we would have a cost estimate of some sort of, as we're going to hire somebody to do this if we move in the direction of the alternative one. Do we have any idea what that's going to cost us? That's my first question, and I think we ought to think about that, or hopefully we can make an estimate before we vote. The other, just a quick comment that, yes, a Campaign for Conservation is unfamiliar to others, but I'll have to tell you, I think most people at this table in the small grants subcommittee had no idea who the heck NFWF was, National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. And we learned over time that, by gosh, they were pretty good people. So just because we don't know who they are. I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest a compromise. I'm wondering how people would respond if we said, all right, as an organization, Campaign for Conservation doesn't do this. But the expectation is that in order to do it, they're going to have to rely on the data, the synthesis that the campaign actually produced. Is that a satisfactory way of resolving this?
Jim and then Bob.
Mr. Chair, I wish I'd like to ask David, because I didn't understand his answer. I thought we asked him if the Campaign for Conservation had boiled these numbers down, because when, is it Mr. Hoke who visited us from
Hobbs
told us at the executive council meeting that they had not boil these numbers down. They had not boiled these specific, grassland numbers and wetland numbers at all. That they would just be giving us raw numbers. Now, is that true or not? Have they boiled these numbers down or haven't they?
They have worked the numbers, but they.
What does that
clearly,
mean?
They have clearly not been able to tease out what is a wetland under the. How much grassland is included in the wetland plan of the Ducks plan? Nobody's been able to do that. That is a confusing number at best, and it doesn't matter who you ask.
Okay, so what numbers would they be giving us?
Bill, maybe you can help shed some light on this.
What they have done that was of value to us is they've taken the statewide goals from the duck plan, the pheasant plan, and other plans, and disaggregated them into their 14 regions, which can approximately be reaggregated into our 5 regions. That's the leverage we get. There's this other concept that is an important concept that Council Member Cox brings up, which is scrubbing out the overlap. And I think that what Council Member Hartwell is saying is that no one has scrubbed out the overlap and that it may not be possible to scrub out the overlap other than professional opinion.
Bob.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I would ask, just to know, I don't expect the council members to respond to this, but how many of you read the plan? How many of you have seen the spreadsheet of the 14 regions that were consolidated into a single spreadsheet from all of the plans? I know I have. I'm sure
I've seen it.
I think we have to see that is quite a bit of work to have gotten to that point. Another point I would simply make is that we're not asking the Campaign for Conservation to do anything. They've already done it. The question we're asking ourselves is, do we want to utilize it or start, in effect, from scratch? But also make this point. I think Lesman said that, or someone had said that, you know, we want to start with the professionals, conservation professionals, and not the Campaign for Conservation. But the fact of the matter is, the Campaign for Conservation started with the work of the conservation professionals who created those reports and plans that they then reviewed and aggregated into 14 regions and the spreadsheet that I referred to. So I think it's just important to understand that sequence, that data, how it exists. Ask yourself if you've reviewed it in depth and have an understanding of it, and if there's any value to it. And then I would just, I'm not sure, maybe it was Darby or somebody had asked the question of the cost. And I guess, Bill, I would ask you, even from the back of the room, you can probably answer this question. How much time does it take to bring us to a point, absent the Campaign for Conservation's aggregated effort, to allow us the opportunity to then have conservation professionals do the work? We have a timeline in this second document here, and I'm asking myself if that's realistic. Given what we know is a year and a half worth of effort on the Campaign for Conservation, knowing that we have recommendations that are due to the legislature by January 15th, backing from there, and the time it's going to take for the conservation groups that are likely to seek funding from us to review and respond, for us to score. So I'm just asking from a real, raw, practical standpoint. Today is June 17th, and we got 6 months, guys, before our next set of recommendations are done. So I say a bunch of things for information purposes, and I have one question.
Bill?
Well, the milestone that we need to hit with the use of the conservation professionals and their goals and things like that is to have a plan done by mid-September.
At the latest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would suspect that going back to square one would add 4 to 5 weeks to the committee, the executive committee recommendation. Unless the conservation professionals went to the work that had been done earlier in the 50-year vision, which, talking to many of them, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I'm sorry, can I follow
up? Yeah, Bob, please.
Bill, any sense on, you know, we had this issue of that David pointed out, terminology differences and so forth, but that yet is yet to be reconciled. We're closing up shop here.
We're here for eternity.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes, sir.
Help you. Do you know anybody in law enforcement? Do we have a sense? I mean, is that practical basis of those kind of things to be resolved anytime.
Bill?
That's a rhetorical question.
Well,
not to my knowledge.
Let me just state that whatever version was adopted, the intent I thought, and I guess reflecting the wishes of the executive committee, that we would give something, not just a blank sheet of paper, but some data to work from. And really, the alternative version, all I tried to do was scrub out Campaign for Conservation in Maine, simply because it was a lightning rod for a lot of misinformation that was out there by people who didn't understand it. And I got really frustrated, to be quite honest, about people not knowing the full facts of what the intent of the report of Campaign for Conservation was, that they weren't cooking up their ideas, but they were just doing our work, had done our work, not their own opinion, but just disaggregating the plan data, and that we would give that to the resource professionals. So this alternative version was simply to scrub out that name because people, I mean, to be quite honest, I'm getting calls and emails at night and on weekends about this, and it was, to be quite honest, very misinformed information. And so that was the whole intent of this alternative version. Not to change the process, but to scrub out that name so people would understand. And I think everyone would agree that council is in charge every step of the way. This is our process. This is not the DNR's process. This is not the Fish and Wildlife Service process. This is not the Campaign for Conservation process. This is the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council process, period. So, Wayne.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to withdraw my motion or my amendment. Just clearly because I want to see how it does on its own.
So we have, so with that, I would like, if so, we have a motion on the table to adopt that. I would like to make an amendment, hopefully a friendly amendment, to this motion that we have now by David, and that is, if you turn to page 7 of the executive committee report, my recommendation would be that we eliminate that column that says Campaign for Conservation. Because, in fact, that is our work. I mean, I would assume that our executive director, given this document or some version of it, will use his or her resources to figure out how to get this step done. And if that means going to the Campaign for Conservation data or else hiring someone to do the exact same thing, we'll let them figure out how to do it to get the job done. And so if we eliminate that second column, that would be my amendment to the motion so that all of that, those first two columns, fall under the purview of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Yes, Les.
Sir, I think you made some very subtle different changes also in your alternative version that I can't pull out right now, but reading it, it made more sense than the way it was presented in the original version. So I think we'd have to go through each line item to look at the difference, but that is the main one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that.
Yeah, I think.
Sure, sure. I would say the same thing. This was, to go back to the original point, I liked the way it was written better. It just was clear, more concise.
Beyond the issue of the camera.
Besides that.
You know, I think we're talking in circles here. I think everyone is, I think, agreeing, at least tacitly, about how we plan to proceed. It's a matter of kind of how we want to say that. Right now, we have a motion on the table to adopt the executive committee report, and I have made a motion to amend that motion by eliminating that Campaign for Conservation column and combining the first two columns. And I guess my suggestion is we can do that, and then we can go through, if that's a decision of this council, and then we can look at how we can clarify, even section by section. For example, one of the things we suggested at the executive committee is put something in brief, a kind of an overview statement, which is in this alternative version. We could, you know, put that in if that helps clarify. Les.
Well, I don't know exactly the parliamentary procedure, but is it, could we have a motion to accept either the executive council version or the alternative version?
So right now we have a motion on the table to accept the executive committee version with the amendment that I have offered, which is to eliminate that column that says Campaign for Conservation in Figure 2 on page 7 of the executive committee report.
I think from a procedure standpoint, you're making a motion to amend, which would have to be voted on separately.
Right. My motion would go first, and then we would deal with your motion. Right. Okay. Is there any further discussion on the motion that I made? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No. Opposed. Okay, show of hands, please. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed. Okay, the motion does not carry. So we're back at the original motion that Dave made, which is to adopt the executive committee report. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Aye.
Opposed.
Okay, the motion does not carry. So now we're back to where we started this discussion. We do not have a document. We have two different versions. Wayne.
Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the alternative version.
Okay, so we have a motion to adopt the alternative version. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion is adopted. The last order of business that we have is the schedule. Bill, help us out on the schedule. You have the last sheet in your package should have a travels and meeting schedule for the remaining summer and fall months.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, back on the last slide. Do we need to modify the calendar on page 6, mindful of the additional time consideration?
So what we are referring to, Bill, could you please respond to that?
Yes, I have a meeting with Matt on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I think we can come back in July and revise the calendar with just the advice that it's liable to stretch things out.
Okay. And I guess, members, we don't have to adopt this in a motion, but I guess one of the things I should have asked at the executive committee meeting is to give Bill, the staff, the liberty to fix this document that we just approved, because there may be some inconsistencies in language. In fact, I found a couple myself. Is that just by nods of the heads? Is that okay that Bill has
I think there are some things that need to be.
Yep, great. All right. Bill, the last item of the day is the schedule.
Right. You notice that the schedule starts today, so we can dispense with the June tour, other than to say that tomorrow we'll be out at the Prairie Wetlands Learning Center listening to Rex Johnson provide us with some educational opportunities and then taking a look at some examples of what he's providing us. On July 14th and 15th, we're suggesting that we go to Grand Rapids, and the core of that would be a business meeting that would include an election, a public input meeting in conjunction with the business meeting, and then a presentation on young forest wildlife needs and management, which will take about 3 hours, including a PowerPoint in-house, and then a field trip to take a look at examples of managing forests in a young successional stage for wildlife needs. August 13th, a one-day meeting, public meeting in Rochester. That would run into, I think we need to strike the evening on that one. And then take a look at the southeastern Minnesota cold water fisheries issues and the goat prairies.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
no, Bob? Say that again. I'm confused here. So we would meet just on the 13th?
Right. And the 12th is an error as well. So it would be August 13th, public meeting with evening scratched. So I'll get a corrected version if this is adopted out. Then in September 15th and 16th, St. Paul, the metro area, would be the focus. Business meeting, public input meeting, strike evening, and metro habitat opportunities in the Vermilion River, and take a look at some of the metro WMA issues that we discussed today.
So, Les.
Your question. Bill, does this conflict with the LCCMR scheduled meetings?
There is, I believe, one conflict remaining. We had, I believe, two.
We like to see Senator Saxon's smiling face here, but we should give Ellen Anderson an opportunity.
Take
ridiculous, but on the 14th and the 15th, unfortunately, I'm going to be in Lac Seul.
One of the questions I have is, if, now that we're planning our summer schedule and we're having out-state meetings, and I know we post all our meetings on the LOHC website and all of that, but is it possible for the remainder of our out-state meetings for us to promote those in the local media in the way of a newspaper ad and some radio spots? I would love to see our out-state meetings have 50 people here instead of 3. What can we do to increase that?
I had scheduled preparing press releases last week, and the alternative version seemed to take up a little time. I just didn't get it done.
And press releases are great if they run them. But I'm saying, does our budget allow for us to do something not on a voluntary basis by the local media? I mean, like I said, we're out here trying to gather public input. I'd like to gather lots of public input. You know, so whatever we can do to promote that, I would like to try to do that in our outstate meeting.
Bill, maybe the hometown boy can give a little comment. We didn't have much time here. I mean, Bill, to Bill's defense, we just decided at the last meeting we were going to do it here. So I think at one time we were talking about doing both the meetings at Fergus, and then all of a sudden we decided to have the meeting here. So I think that first one we kind of expected not to have the time frame that we do now, Scott. And I think, I agree. I think we should certainly do that.
So the answer is yes. I've
got a suggestion. I've heard from several council members. You know, two-day commitments are really, really hard. Would council members be amenable to a long single-day meeting? Obviously, your travel is your own to get up. I mean, you'll be reimbursed. But if we were to have a meeting, for example, in Grand Rapids, instead of over 2 days, start a business meeting at 9 in the morning in Grand Rapids. And we do a morning of our business meeting early afternoon. We do a field tour. We end the day maybe at 4 or 5, and people can go back that night.
I would love to see us. All
right. I like that. Okay. So I'm hearing, and we have two dates then for both July and September. And Bill, I know the LCCMR is meeting on one of those two dates in Grand Rapids in July, and maybe we can find the date, all things being equal, that they're not meeting, so that Senator Anderson is able to attend our meeting in July.
Do the best. It's really strange. They're just a few days that people are available.
Okay. Any other comments on this, Wes?
Our schedule books way into next year at this time. I would suggest that we keep it running at least a 9 month force aside on this, so we can put it on the calendar and schedule around it. 3 months isn't enough.
Point well taken. I agree. Any further discussion? So I'd entertain a motion to adopt the proposed meeting schedule with the change that all of our meetings through September will be one-day meetings, and give staff the authority to make the arrangements so that the field work as well as the business meeting can happen in 1 day. So I'm looking for a motion. We have a motion on the table to adopt the meeting schedule as amended. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. That concludes our business. Motion to... Yes, we have a couple comments. Yes, Wayne?
One question or comment. This letter that we recently received from Dave Thompson, it's not just due, but a number of other remarks have been made. And this is basically it. My concern with this are that I see no one in that group would have any fisheries, mild or aquatic habitat back on the field. I felt the same issue with the makeup of the council. Bottom line is, nobody knows who we are. And nobody knows what background we have or what expertise we have, and nobody feels comfortable with the people who are making the decisions. Somehow or another, we need to make sure that we get that out and let people who are relying on us to know what we're all about individually.
Wes?
Just a general announcement. We can, on the migration of the Prairie Wetlands Learning Center, we can take the boring route of the freeway, or we can take the hypotenuse of the triangle, go across country. John, are you going to be traveling to Fergus at all?
I wasn't planning to, no, sir.
My suggestion is that we take the back roads across country around Christina Lake, do a couple, buy a couple of projects, with a short pit stop at a very nice location that we can provide some refreshments at. It's called Viking Valley Nut Club. It's right in route. It's the shortest route. Dinner will be served at 6:30 at the Prairie Wetland Learning Center. This will give us about a 15-20 minute stop in route. So if you're interested, John, if you would be interested in driving up, just follow the Prius.
Okay. Any further comments? Bill.
Mr. Chair, myself and Senator Scogin attended an elk meeting, informative meeting, the other day at the DNR. Is there ever any interest or anything ever brought up about that? And you know, we talk about deprivation in our legislation in the Environmental Natural Resource Committee. Do we care at all, or is anybody getting any information? Would we
habitat?
Too high or too low, or what?
Well, it's growing.
Yeah.
It's growing.
It's migrating.
And,
that hasn't been brought up before this, but
I'll keep you informed. I think I might just put a lot of interest, follow it a little bit, and I'll keep you informed as to what's going on.
Any further comments?
We did.
If not, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Further discussion? No, Bill, one final announcement.
Yeah, I'm going to take a little time and clean up, so Greg and Darby and you may want to catch rides out with someone else, and I'll meet you guys back at the Prairie Learning Center.
Very good.
Hey,
is that right?
Bill, you probably want some help from everybody. Hey, Les, if we get lost, where do we go? Just up 210 or what?
Okay, we're